Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of The Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric. Hello, Don.
Hiya.
We were doing the show there for a second, and then
we were so close to doing the show.
And then that time stopped, and we entered a new time of not so much doing the show as entering a time of abject lack of show and the doing of same. And here's the thing, it happened. It's like it just lurks there like some sort of a wing clutching gremlin, just waiting. Because we have these, the meters over here that, now granted, they're not like electronic or, they're not mechanical meters like we had in the days of old. But, it's on the computer, but they're sort of meters that indicate that the sound is happening and it shows the amplitude of the signal that we're sending out. And as I was watching it, it was like I'd played the Galaxy Quest intro and then just as the Dream Theater started, it's like it just kind of went and just sort of froze. And so now it's probably doing that thing where it's saying, "We're sorry, there's no Rick Emerson show today. Merry Christmas, everyone. We'll be back next week."
All right, hold on a second. So I got to give everybody a second to...
This is why when I was here...
God damn.
I was here in that seat when you were out of town almost every day. I was just basically sitting there going, "God damn!
Let me just... For the
Thomas
love
Gill,
of...
Help me!" Yeah, it was...
All right. We're... back. Sorry about that damn stupid science. Of course, half the people won't even know what the hell this is about, but
no.
It doesn't really matter. For the love of damn stupid science. All right. And then RickEmersonShow.com. All right. Yes. I'm just now getting a hold. Are you on the air? No, okay. Thanks so much. All right. Let's see. All right. Awesome. All right. Yeah. Let's see.
Yeah, it gives me a chance to get more fun and interesting stories.
Listen anew. God damn it. All right. Okay. Okay, I've just sent that tweet. Because I think it's just us and Cheryl at the moment.
Okay.
Should I play the Galaxy Quest thing again?
Sure, why not? It's entertaining. We like it.
I'll probably edit this out later.
You think?
No. All right, hold on. We're gonna do this whole thing again. Sorry about all that. Cheryl, I guess. All right. We're gonna start the whole program. You stay right there. All right. Yeah.
The following is a production of the Emerson
Again.
News Network.
Hey, pardon me. Crew member coming. Fans, right?
Hey, Gwen.
Oh, hey, man. I want to thank you for that nice intro you gave us today.
Guy, you probably don't remember me, do you? It's the sunglasses, right? I was on the show in 82, episode 81. Got killed by a lava monster before the first commercial. Can I sit in and sign a couple autographs?
By Grabthar's hammer, by the Sons of Warvan, I shall avenge you.
By Grabthar's hammer. Next.
Had I moved an inch to the left, the beast would have killed me. On the other hand, my crew was in danger.
How did you know what to do?
Come on. Without my crew, I'm not a commander, huh? I think we all remember what happened to that beast on Enoch 7, right?
Exiting. Time not now, sir.
We are alive.
We made it, Commander. We made it.
By Grabthar's hammer, we live to tell the tale.
Systems register functional.
All systems are working, Commander.
I don't like it. It was too easy.
Wait. No. They're everywhere. There are turrets opening everywhere.
Trap.
We're surrounded, Commander.
It's a core meltdown, sir. It can't be stopped.
Surrender may be our only option.
No. Never give up. Never surrender.
Your orders, sir? Sir, your orders.
Activate the Omega 13.
Never give up. Never surrender.
The Omega 13, Mr. Emerson.
Seriously, now I've just got my eye on this computer the entire time. And the thing is, here's the thing. One of the worst parts about this is there's nothing we can really do about this. Because it's not even the computer. It's not even the hardware. It's just that particular application, which we are obliged to use.
Yes.
To do this. Staring at it hatefully. You can't see it right now, but I'm looking at it with a baleful, hateful eye.
You are.
All right.
You're giving it the greasy fish eye.
I'd like to thank all the supportive messages that immediately appeared in my, Skype and the email. One guy who just typed, lol, fail, for an entire page. Just copied it. This one just says, Galaxy Quest twice, you are a loser. How about this? Wow, I thought the program I was debugging had somehow poured over into your show opening. Disastrous! He types in, okay.
All right, excellent, thank you.
How about this? Cracking start to the show. Says Mark the Brit. Says, let's not be reminded of the week when you were away. Poor Don.
God.
And then he typed, no, but I think it's just, I think he's saying that it's sort of a into each life. Unstable applications must fall. He says, let's not be reminded of the week you were away. And then he says, poor Don, bless her. With a winky emoticon there. So I think it's, I think he's saying that we should commiserate as brethren and sistren. Let's see. Jesus, nay, Aaron in the OC, says, I wanted to use that because he was in Paris. Says, I wanted to use the whole, hey, and I'm back thing, but now I can't because you guys are using it because your gear sucks. All right. Thank you, sir. Welcome back to the program. Appreciate it. Glad to have you out there. All right. That's wonderful. And by the way, when we thought it was just Cheryl, this guy says, no, you have one other listener.
Thank you.
Well, you got to hear the Galaxy Quest thing twice, which, let's be honest, it was just as funny the second time, if not more so.
I laughed both times.
I lulled. I really did. Here's the great thing. I mean, there's a lot of great things about that opening. But to me, there's two just perfect moments in that opening, which is, it's not really even a montage so much as just two clips put together. One is an actual clip from the presumed, actual show. The other is just when they were at the convention. And what is it, Sam Rockwell? Is that the guy that,
yes.
I got eaten by the lava monster. Do you mind if I just slide in and sign some photographs? But it's like Alan Rickman is there, and he's doing the whole, and I'm so used to hearing it with the Geek Watch edited down that I forget that he does that. It's actually two guys, but he does that whole, like, the guy comes up, I grab Thor's hammer, by the Sons of Warven, and he sort of signs the thing, hands it, the next guy comes up and he just goes, by grab Thor, and you just hear Rickman just grab the picture out of his hand. But then what really sells it is that right after you hear Rickman grab the piece of paper out of the guy's hand, you just hear like a little of the Sharpie right there. I don't know why, but that's the thing that really like seals the humor for some reason. It's right when you actually hear the little squiggle of the pen as Rickman is signing it. Like, speaking of a guy who does stuff hatefully. So anyway, so there you go. A little Galaxy Quest for your Tuesday. Well, now 41 minutes after the hour of, earlier, the hour of one, and this is the month of May, the year of our Lord, 2011. Thank you for coming by, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed and flawlessly executed studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district here in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon, the home of all good things, people's thoughts and ideas. Thank you for joining us on this Tuesday, and welcome to day 12. Hey, I got a little thing I'm going to read about Whitney Houston. We already had the story last hour about her going back into rehab, and this is really all worth it for one little quote that we'll get to later on. So I might read this at the top. Because we have any... Now, do we have any... I don't think we have any, like, an actual sound on this, so I think that there's no reason for me to wait and do this story later. I can just do it here at the beginning. All right. So we'll get to this Whitney Houston story. That's all of the things I'm going to say here in the opening, they're all less important than this. The fact that Don Taylor had a virtual conversation with Daniel Baldwin today.
I did.
I mean, which is really, that's like the best thing of the entire month, probably even this year. I mean, I don't know what could happen that would even top that. So, and I don't know much about it, except that I saw the very, very last... like Twitter thing, the last tweet you sent out about it. That's all I know is this sort of, I just got the epilogue to the wrap up of the entire thing. So we'll talk about Dawn Taylor and her new BFF, Daniel Baldwin, in just a moment. Let's see, Penis Watch coming up today, Geek Watch coming up today, Taser Watch coming up today. We'll recap last night's tedious, pointless episode of House as we get toward the end of the season, which, by the way, I don't mind saying, is going to be my last. I'm done.
Yeah.
I am done after this season.
Yeah, did you see the next week on? Yeah, it's like I was actually sitting there and I watched the whole thing where they come up with the words like, over the years, House has done some crazy things.
Has he gone too far?
Yeah, and I was just going, again? Yeah. Really? Again? No. And I realized it's like, I'm so done with you, House.
That is, I had that thought last night, and it was, and I've sort of, and I've kind of, somebody's typing, sorry, what? House sucked last night? Say it isn't so. I know, it's, I mean, we've talked about this for the last several, most of this season actually, and you know, and a little bit of, you know, last season. I was like watching season six, going like, well, what is up with this? But it is now just past for me the point of, it is past the point of no return, where I no longer, we have passed the Rubicon, from, you know, before which they might have been able to salvage the show. I no longer believe, barring some season or some series finale, I mean, unless there's some episode that they wrap the entire show up with, you know, next year or 10 years from now, whenever it is that they finally just pull the plug on the thing. I mean, I'll grant that they may do some, you know, like the final 10 minutes of the series may end up being good, because that was even the case with 6 Feet Under, which had also become, like, doddering and useless. But I have lost hope that they're going to make anything good out of the remaining, like, regular episodes between now and the end of the show. So we'll talk a bit about that here in a few. So, yeah, Penis Watch, Geek Watch, Taser Watch. We'll recap last night's episode of House. I'll talk a bit about Whitney Houston. Let's see. We'll talk about Dawn Taylor and Daniel Baldwin. Hey, you're in just a moment. Let's see. What else?
We may or may not have a guest.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's a thing that might happen later on, so I guess be listening. We'll all find out together. Don't forget, coming up this weekend, the hell is this weekend? Oh, this weekend is Wonder Northwest. That's going to be happening, and there's going to be... I don't know, things and happenings aplenty. All kinds of geekery under one roof, including but not limited to. There's going to be a panel on podcasting that is happening Sunday, the 15th at noon, called Irresistibly Kneel Before Pod. That'll be doing along with Court and Bobby, and I think one of the pirates. And like, what is the? Is it? And I have to plead ignorance on this. Is it Kaiju Cast? Is that how you pronounce that?
I have no idea.
And I believe it's like an all Godzilla.
Okay.
Podcast? Does that sound like a thing that exists?
Sure, why not?
I should figure this stuff out probably before Sunday.
Maybe, yeah.
I'm bluffing my way through it. So that's coming up. And then today is Tuesday, which means that tomorrow is Wednesday, which means the day after tomorrow. I'm going to be signing for Zombie Economics at Barnes & Noble, 7 p.m. Barnes & Noble Lloyd Center, which is a designation, by the way, that I forgot to put on my... So I did this thing last night for the very first time ever. I hurdled over... what's a thing that one hurdles over that's not a hurdle?
An ottoman.
I'm thinking the Dick Van Dyke. Cheese.
I'm thinking the Dick Van Dyke Show opening.
No, what is it like? What is the thing that horses jump over?
A steeple.
A steeple. Yes, I hurdled over a steeple. Well, that just sounds dumb.
Yeah, see, that's the thing.
I did this thing. I crossed a thing that I hadn't crossed before.
Cleared a hurdle.
Cleared a hurdle. Sure. But I did this thing that I'd never done last night. You and I talked about Facebook and Twitter and all of the, like, you know, remember how it took us? No, well, I guess it wasn't you. Maybe it was Walker, or it might have been Walker and then you on a different day, where it took us like a day and a half to figure out how to use the hashtags, because I didn't know what they were for.
Oh, okay.
And that was where the ignorant radio host hashtag came from, because David, I think it was the day that David was in, and because you were at the hospital with Patrick, and David's like, yeah, I don't know what those are all about either. I'm old. And I was, me too. I have no idea. And it turns out that Sarah and Greg had no idea what the hashtags were for, and like everybody in the world knew but us. They were keeping the knowledge secret from us. And it is that way even more so with Facebook, because Twitter, I mean, Twitter is slowly, they're having feature creep. Not unlike our friends at Google are doing. You were just lamenting that thing that Google was doing with their stupid image search, which used to be, I sound like an old guy, but it's like the image search in Google used to be so easy and quick and clean and efficient. And now it's that whole thing of like, the images come back and then you got to hover the mouse over the top and wait for the little thing to come up to tell you like where it is and how big it is and what the dimensions are.
And they want to give you like page after page of it on one page, and it takes a really long time to load.
Yeah, and you got to go to the bottom and go to show more images as opposed to just being like, you know, clicking the next button.
Yeah.
So it's just, it's become a huge pain in the ass. And Twitter is doing some of that too, where it's like they're adding, you know, a few more features. Can I just tell you this, by the way? Can I suggest the one feature? As much as I'm not a big fan of people just piling features into crap, because then it just becomes like Microsoft Word. It just becomes this huge, like, bloated, like, Hogzilla of a program that no one wants to use. Can I tell you right now, and I wonder if it's the same one that you would think of, there is a single feature, there is a man, a certain man, there is one feature in Twitter that really needs to be instituted, something that does not exist in Twitter now, to the best of my knowledge, a feature that they need to add, and then it would be perfect. Dawn Taylor?
The ability to edit your tweets?
Well,
after you post them, rather than deleting them and reposting them.
Now, is that the thing? Can you not do that now?
No.
Is it like... I think maybe this is the thing I was talking about with you the other day. I was talking about how it's like, Ain't It Cool. I think on Ain't It Cool, you can finally delete your stuff, but it's like, I don't think you can edit it now. And I guess maybe you can't edit Twitter stuff either. That would be nice.
Yeah, on Twitter, you can't edit. You have to go back and you have to, like, delete it entirely and then repost it, the correct version of it.
Somebody's saying search for a username. Can you not? You can search for a username, though, on Twitter, can't you?
I think so, yeah.
By the way, and if you're searching for a username, all you would do is just type in twitter.com/ and then the name.
Or just type that Twitter username into Google and come up with it.
But I mean, if the username is like grabthar55, you would just type twitter/grabthar55. That's how you search for that username. And then if they're not in the system, then they're not, if you can't find them that way, then it means that you don't know their username. Which means you search for them by their real name, which you can do. Yeah, that's a dumb complaint. Michael in Vancouver, I'm sorry, I'm sure you're a smart guy, but you misfired with
he
that.
He may mean searching for it within the program itself.
Mean all posts by or something?
Yeah, something like that. Or just there being a field in which you could do it, because you can do that on Facebook. There's a field that says search for, and you can search for a person or a page within Facebook without having to go outside and go to, like, the address bar of your browser or anything like that. And there is no field within Twitter itself to do that.
All right. Well, let's assume that I understand all that and that I agree. Yes.
Okay.
I'll stipulate that I agree with that. No. Here's the feature I'm saying for me. This is the feature that the Twitter needs to have, that they need to roll out. The ability to just ignore certain Twitter users. You know, because there's a whole social awkwardness thing about unfollowing or blocking or whatever. This is just a thing where it's like, they continue to tweet, and guess what? You're just going to go, and you just don't see it anymore.
Well, I think that's the whole idea behind making lists.
Yeah, but I mean, if you got like 500 Twitter users, and you're like, I just don't want to see that guy.
Oh, I know,
people who, like, tweet every 30 seconds, and we all know who we're talking about. I could be talking about lots of people.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, I don't know, however many, 1,200 or something, and I don't want to be making lists out of all. But sometimes you just go like, she posts all the time, and it's always dribble, and I don't want to see it. Or, you know, that guy is constantly just, you know, putting up, you know, just stuff that I don't want to see, or stuff that is not germane to my... But then there's a whole thing about, like, well, I don't want to unfollow. Because then I don't even really know. Does somebody know if you unfollow them on Twitter? Do they get a thing like Dawn is no longer following you?
I don't think so.
You're her sworn enemy.
No, I think you just have to go look.
I'm just saying, it seems like it'd be nice if there was a thing like you can do with your email, where when somebody sends something, it just routes it to you don't even see it.
I think the thing is that there are people who actually obsessively follow that stuff. There are programs that will keep track of that stuff for you. And I know people who actually look on a regular basis to see if anybody's... They go specifically to these programs to see if anybody's dropped them from, you know, Twitter or what have you. I know people... There was one of those from LiveJournal that you could look to see if somebody had unfriended you. How many people... It would list who had friended you, who had unfriended you, what the dates were that these things happened. And that was just weird, because it's like, I don't think I really want to know.
And it's on whose personal blacklist you reside.
I just take it a little too personally.
The following people of you are in disfavor with.
Yeah, and then especially when you see, like, one day a whole bunch of people unfriended you on the same day, and then you have to go back and go, well, what did I say that day? What was that about?
If they all got together in a sewing circle, and, like, you drew the slip of paper.
Oh, that was the day I said how much I like Nazis.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, in any event, so Twitter's a pretty basic, streamlined program, and in that way, I quite like it. Here's the thing: the irony of technology, Don, is that, and this is also not, this is also just an unavoidable consequence of. I'm sorry, everybody, just excuse me. I have to adjust a cable that's on the table because it's laying incorrectly, and it's going to bother my obsessive compulsive nature.
Okay,
hold on a second.
You know, there's cables all over the table.
Shut your mouth. There we go. Okay, now all is right with the world.
And now you like partially, I think you unplugged my headphones.
I didn't even touch your headphones.
Well, then how come I only hear out of one side of my ear
maybe,
now?
Maybe you've got defective cochlea.
No, you jarred the box. Put it back.
What if I just hit the table?
Fix it.
I didn't.
There you go.
Okay, please don't. I just hit the box with my hand.
Well, it made the sound come back.
Maybe that's what I had to do with the computer from now on. It just starts to go belly up in the middle of the show. I just, bam, just kick the screen. But here's the thing about technology, is that as technology advances and as I become ever more aged and wizened, I start to appreciate things that just do one thing and that do it really well and that don't just, and that just don't bog you down with just a bunch of, with just a bunch of crap, with just a bunch of useless features. Anyway,
have we gotten to the part about the hurdle yet?
No, we haven't. I'm just, okay. Look, can a brother just work at his own speed?
Nope, sure. I was just wondering if I'd missed it.
All right. Now people are screwing with me saying that I've knocked everything off the air by hitting the table again.
No,
don't stop that. Anyway, so last night, I had to do this thing that I'd never done before, and that is to create an event on Facebook. And I swear to God, here's the guy that I am. I have now officially, I mean, not even just sort of like in terms of my general demeanor and behavior, I have now officially become this guy because I did this thing last night. I literally had to go to Google, and I swear to you, I was like one of your idiots on Ham-Fisted Radio that has like writes into Yahoo questions or whatever about like, dear Yahoo, how does my penis work? Or whatever it is they ask, you know? Like, what is it, you know? I have difficulty drinking glasses of water. What should I do? I had to go to ehow.com last night to try to figure out how to do an event in Facebook. And then I just sat and just stared at a wall for a while and thought about the passing hand of time and my own mortality. Have you? Well, you've probably done it. You've created a Facebook event.
No, I haven't. And I also had people asking me, like, every once in a while, somebody go, how come Ham-Fisted Radio doesn't have a page on Facebook? It should. And I'm like, because I'd have to go make one, and yeah. I don't know how to make one. And I don't really know if I don't know if the benefits to me would be worth the effort to go, like, figure out how to do it.
See,
and it's one more thing I have to maintain.
Another skill you have to master, and then something else you have to maintain and constantly be updating. And
yeah.
This is what you get. How hard is it? You click on events, then click new. See, if only you'd been there, like in my home office. I couldn't, for the life of me, first of all, I could not find for anything. I mean, I scoured the page, or so it seemed. I couldn't find the goddamn events button. I mean, I don't know. Even now, I couldn't tell you offhand where it was.
Is it right on the the left-hand side?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Here's where I was. I know this just sounds like I'm trying to rationalize, like I'm just defending my own idiocy, and I suppose to an extent I am. And we'll get to your Daniel Baldwin thing in a minute, because that'll wash all of this away like a cleansing sorbet from the brackish palate.
Well, there is the thing that just says upcoming events, like right on the...
Okay, but where are you? Don't just say you're at Facebook.
No,
are you on your profile page?
I'm on my newsfeed page.
Okay, see, but I never go there.
Oh.
Like, I have bookmarked directly to other people. Like, I care about them. I have bookmarked directly to facebook.com/RickEmerson.
Oh.
Because, I mean...
So you got upcoming events on one side, and then over the other side, you've got newsfeed messages, events, friends.
Right.
And you can just click
But go to your page. Go to facebook.com/whatever, Don Taylor.
It wouldn't be there because...
Okay, but how would I know that? If I've never scheduled an event, if it's something I am doing, I, Rick Emerson, am scheduling an event, it makes sense they would give me the option to do that on the page that is all my stuff.
Well, yeah, but as soon as you see that it's not there, wouldn't you just the first thing you do click home?
No.
Or Facebook
no.
And just go to the
no,
main
by,
page?
No, by definition, the first thing that I would do is to go on the Google and go, hey, does anybody know how to... Because, like,
after 5 seconds of thinking about this, I realize I don't know what to do.
Well, I don't
help
think it,
me, Internet.
If I had just been left to my own devices, I don't think it ever would have occurred to me to go to the front page because here's how I visualize it. Think of it like a series of condos or townhouses, mm-hmm. where you walk in the main door down below. But when you walk in the main door, what does that do? The main door just takes you into the complex, and then there's everybody's front doors inside. I view that front page of Facebook as being like the front door to the apartment complex, which means that like your mailbox wouldn't be there because it's everybody's. So I'm thinking, well, like, why would my phone be on the front door of the apartment? It wouldn't be. It'd be in my apartment. So I was thinking that my events would be on my page. Do you see how I could have come to that conclusion? And then once I didn't, then I'm just like, well, it can't. It's gone. That was my next thing. It's like, well, they've hidden it somewhere. Because Mark Zuckerberg stays up late at night thinking how he can screw with me, Emerson. I'll show him. And so then I'm an idiot going to eHow. But here's the thing about it is, no matter how, one of the great gifts that the internet has given us. You are never, ever the dumbest person on the planet, ever. Yeah. I mean, I don't care. You could be at home sitting in your own waste, eating a pile of your own navel lint, and there's going to be somebody dumber on the internet than you. And I went there, and there was like a whole thing on eHow, and it was all about like, here's how, you know, because somebody had gone, and I went to Google and I typed in, how do I make a Facebook, and it just said event, and I was like, ah, yes, I'm not the first. Hurrah! I am not the first to blaze this path through the dark woods. And then I went there and it was, first, go to Facebook.com. And that's the moment when I felt like an idiot, by the way. That is the horizon at which I became. Because they said what everybody else, including you, everybody, step one, go to Facebook.com. And I went, oh, it's a Facebook.com thing.
See, that's the difference is that you look at Facebook and you think Facebook is all about me. And then there's also this area where I could read other people's stuff if I was so inclined.
Yeah.
See, I probably like most people use Facebook. I think about it the opposite way. I look at Facebook and go, there's where I go to read other people's stuff. And there's also this area where I can just go and just look at my stuff. But I think about it as being like a social network about like other people as well first. And my little hidey hole is like sort of a little, you know, a back door into my private area. Whereas you go directly to the private area and just go screw everyone else.
No, the second day I used Facebook, maybe even the first day, I just bookmarked directly past that front and just went right to, you know, / Rick Emerson. Yeah. Which is where I go on like anything. Because, I mean, seriously, I mean, what else am I on the internet for? I mean, honestly, can I just say, here's a couple comments. One, you are never supposed to go to your own page. This is, and then Thomas Gill, of all people, and keep in mind, now can I just say this? Keep in mind, Thomas Gill, you know, brilliant person, works in technical support and in IT and information and internet technologies. He works with, you know, dumb people all day long who call up because they've managed to make a mess of things, right? So you must figure he has infinite patience because he deals with idiots all the livelong day. I swear to God, Thomas Gill just types, good, you should feel stupid.
I wonder, though, how many times during the day he wants to say that to people.
Endlessly. Yeah. And to people, we mean us. So anyway, so that's me. So I'm at eHow, like, okay, step one, go to Facebook. Okay. Step two, click. And then it's like a whole thing, you know, and then it was like a comedy of errors. So I was watching House. It was like being punished on every level, like all my senses. Watching House while cursing at the internet and, you know, getting carpal tunnel, clicking yes, or whatever, like next to the, you know, username. It was just a whole thing. Anyway, so then I, by the way, then I, you know, was like, finally, I'm done, you know, and it was for the book signing. And so then I'm typing in the, you know, the thing. And by the way, can I just say, just the final little complaint here about Facebook and the events and the whatever. I got two complaints. I know why they do this. But it's like shades of MySpace when you were trying to send it like a message to somebody, and it's like you were obliged to like by hand, like one by one, add like 7,000 people. So thanks. But the second thing is this: it's like as I'm doing all of this, I then it says like, you know, would you like to put a street address? And I type in Barnes and Noble, and it auto completes, and it says Barnes and Noble, like 1716 Lloyd Center, or whatever the address is. And I'm like, oh, great. And it auto completes that. And then I hit, you know, post and save, whatever. But then when it posts, I wake up this morning to a bunch of people going like, but which one? Where's the address? And that somehow magically, that was a thing where they like waved it in front of me and then that part didn't appear. That's not the worst part though. And this is fairly late at night. This is like maybe 2, 2.30 last night. Because it took me hours to figure out exactly where the button was. And, you know, at a certain point, I just can't be texting like Thomas or like you or Seamus or, hello, please forgive me, but I... But so I finally get this invite or this event done for the Zombie Economic signing, which is happening this Thursday, by the way. That's at 7 p.m. at the Barnes & Noble Lloyd Center. I post it, and then I swear to God, within like 7 seconds, like 50 people have just said like no, they've just hit like the decline or the like I will not be. Like, instantly. It was like they were just waiting. It was like there was a bunch of people just waiting out there like a school of fish just to tell me to piss off.
Well, we do have an awful lot of listeners who don't live, in nearby.
Well, they could at least say maybe. They don't have to mean it. They could just say like, well, perhaps, if I happen to be in the area.
Now, see, if there was that as an option,
there's a maybe.
There's maybe, but there's not like, I wish I could, but I'm in Japan. Or something like that,
Whatever.
And you don't say maybe for something like that because,
I think as we've learned on Facebook is all about me and my needs and what I think. And
and apparently I'm making you feel good about yourself.
Yes, yes. No, it was like, so I hit like,
What would happen though if all of these people said yes, they were coming? Then you'd be like, crap, 1,200 people. There's only going to be like 17 chairs. What the hell?
Well, that's less of a problem for me than it is for the person who has to put out the chairs at Barnes &
Noble. There could be a riot.
As long as I'm not the one who has to, as long as I'm not the one who has to go through and, like, clean up, the coffee cups and whatever afterward, I don't care. It doesn't matter to me. Yeah, so I hit the thing, and then immediately scores of people who were just, hovering, going, oh, here's my chance to finally. It's like they've been waiting out there for 5 years for the chance to say no, because I've never made an event ever before.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, Emerson's making an event. Everybody, quick, to your computer. All right? Well, he's posted it. No! It's like you're some live journal. Like, they all get together and just, to hell with him.
Is there any kind of an incentive for people to come dressed as zombies?
The pure joy of doing it?
Yeah, because I think there should be some kind of encouragement that people come to this thing and just alarm people at the Barnes & Noble at Lloyd Center by walking around dressed as zombies.
Well, I will say this, actually. I was thinking about doing the, and I hadn't ever actually mentioned this, but I've got these promotional the kind of bookmarks that they made that are the zombie Ben Franklin's zombie $100 bills, and on the back they have the book and
cool.
The whatever. So I was thinking about doing a whole like, and if you're one of the first 15 people to bet, you'll get a bookmark. And I just that is really the only thing that occurred to me, and then I obviously forgot about it because until this moment it was just sitting in my head. So I think the incentive is A, zombie, and also. I don't know. I can't even imagine what I would give as the incentive. I'm not saying there isn't something. I just can't really think of anything. What would you recommend, Don?
I don't know. I'm still trying to figure out stuff to get to give away to people and do stuff at Wonder Northwest. Yeah. So,
well, the joy of your company, Don.
Well, there's
the radiant, sparkling wit of your.
There may
your
be cookies.
Really?
I'm trying to figure out because I want to offer people. I've been trying to figure out. I want people to have a reason to come to our table and come visit, other than just seeing us. But you also want to draw them in somehow. And I thought if we had like some maybe some trivia questions, pop culture trivia, some of our serial killer trivia questions we've got here, and if they get the answer correct, then they get a little something. And one of the little somethings I was thinking about doing, I was thinking about making some of the cookies like I make for big-ass sandwiches. And it's like, you get the trivia question correct, you get a cookie.
There you go. See? So there you go. See, that's what I'm saying.
So, but I was thinking, a little something
apply
for
apply that same mental candle power to this. So, I'd sort of... And especially
I'm sorry,
because,
I don't... I'm not on the payroll for this zombie economics thing.
This book thing.
If Cheryl isn't going to help me with my events, I'm not helping you with yours. That's how this works, Mr.
Especially because because I think so the signing is the 12th, and then there's like the 14th. The 14th is really going to be an odd day in the city because there's Cable Hashitani has the zombie walk happening, and then the zombie walk actually is going to end at or around Wonder Northwest, and then There's like a zombie. What is that? There's that bar, the Lovecraft bar.
Lovecraft.
And they're having like a zombie drinking thing there. So like half the zombies are going to go to Lovecraft, and then half are going to go to the one at Northwest, and then the other, you know, the other third, I guess, are going to the zombie prom, which is that night. It really is going to be. It's going to be quite a week. So in any event, so if you've seen the you see the event posted, just know that really a large amount of toil and sweat went into that. All right. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program today. Penis Watch, Geek Watch, Taser Watch. We got a recap of last night's installment of House and so forth. By the way, speaking of the signing, which is happening this Thursday, I want to thank Court and Fatboy from Cascadia.fm, CourtandFatboy.com, who I was on their show this morning along with Mr. David Walker, and we were talking about, you know, because he has a Darius Logan Super Justice Force, which is great, and as I mentioned to him today, that is not just me, I'm not just saying it, that's not just me waxing his car, it's a really great book, and you can find out more about it by going to DariusLogan.com, and he and I were sort of talking about the different routes we had taken to, the different roads that had led us to the world of bookery. So thanks to Cascadia.fm and to Court and Fatboy for having us on today. Dawn Taylor, you're tracking the following headlines for the good people of Portland.
I am. We've got a man who jumps to death off the world's tallest tower. The Duluth Ball Slasher has been arrested again.
Okay.
And a Wisconsin judge calls a defendant, quote, gayer than a sweet-smelling jockstrap.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have. Was it done in a hateful way or sort of jolly, kind of jocund?
I think it was a little of both. I think it was both jolly and hateful.
Okay. let's see. What do we have here? Okay, so I got the Whitney Houston thing. I'll get to that here in just a second.
Well, we do need to actually take a break, and I need to see if we have a guest who is coming. If we do not have a guest,
why don't you open the door?
Then we can.
And just lean your head out. Because if we have a guest, that always keeps us on time. We're not gonna get terribly behind. What? I can't hear. I guess my headphones are on. All right. So what are we doing? All right. So we're gonna take a break here, and we're gonna come back with a guest. I'm sorry.
We'll do the Whitney Houston.
Well, I don't. Really, I'm just no. It's not really that. I mean, it's not. Look, it's not about Whitney Houston. It's about you and Daniel Baldwin.
Well, yeah.
We got that whole thing to get
to. We'll get to talk about that.
And then I got this whole. Can I just ask you this though, real quickly?
Sure.
And then we got this thing about bridesmaids. Is it bridesmaids or singular?
Bridesmaids, I believe it is.
So it's a film, and so you're going to be obliged to go see that. Are you being punished for something? Is that why you have to see that movie tonight?
No. My BFF Eric D. Snyder just sent some message on Twitter last night and said, "Don Taylor, you going to come see Bridesmaids with me tomorrow night? Because everybody I know has already seen it already." And then he put a little sad emoticon face. And so I thought, okay.
When you call him your BFF, is that like how you call him Snidely or...
Snidles.
Snidles. What a horrible nickname that is. I'm sure it comes from a place of love, but boy, that's a terrible name.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that here in a few. And then, but just real...
He used to give me rides to movies, and he called me Miss Daisy. So, you know, we have our little nicknames for each other.
Just real quickly before we break. Well, first of all, so who is it we're going to be... Who is this guest? I don't know anything about this guest.
This
coming.
Is Holly, and Holly's whose last name slips my mind. But Holly is with Wonder Northwest. She actually works with Billy Galaxy at his store. And she is coordinating the Lolita Fashion Show.
Which is apparently not what it sounds like.
Right. And so she is going to explain to us what Lolita Fashion is. And what we're in for, and
should
how
explain
this is
why they chose such an awkward and misleading name.
Quite possibly, yes.
Okay, because I'm certainly going to ask that, because that becomes then a thing you can't really, you know.
Yeah.
It just becomes odd, because then it requires like a whole explanation. But I think so. That's happening this weekend. Northwest.
It's part of the Wonder Northwest thing convention.
All right. So
yes.
we'll talk to Holly. We get back. But real quickly, before we do that, let me just ask you this question.
Okay.
In the kitchen this morning, what was you've done this like three times today of having to mop things off of yourself. In the kitchen, it was almost like I thought for a second. It was almost like you were sort of like you were like a Dawn Taylor impressionist. You were like somebody like a Dawn Taylor cover band. It was like come here. She's being all Dawn. Like I almost wanted to get Greg and Sarah to come in as you were sort of sponging off your front this morning. It was like you know what it is. Here's the thing of you spilling food on yourself. it's like a physical catchphrase, you know, where it's like you don't go dynamite or like isn't that special. You just go like and just pour stuff on you. It's like it's a kinesthetic catchphrase.
Yes.
What were you spilling this morning?
Well, what happened this morning is before the show, when I was sitting in the kitchen, I was having a cup of coffee from Plaid Pantry that I almost got into a fight with a hobo over, but that's a different story entirely. And I was drinking that coffee and enjoying one of those delicious little cheap fried berry pies, the little pies. And I glorped a little bit of berry stuff on my shirt. And the thing is, it's the berry stuff, so it'll stain if you don't get it out. So I was like, looked down and I went, oh, God, because I... As you mentioned, I can't eat anything without spilling food on myself. So not only did I have to get that off of me, but then I immediately had to, like, get a wet paper towel and clean it off, or else it would leave a permanent little purple stain on me.
Let me ask you this. So let's say you have a random piece of clothes. Let's say a pair of jeans.
Yeah.
And you get your tomato sauce or something. Yeah. This happens to me occasionally. You get a little tomato sauce. Now, is that... Oh, let's say you're not in a position to take them off and immediately, like, run them to the washer.
Okay.
Are you supposed to... Like, take them off and, like, run them under the tap or something? Or does that set the stain? I'm never sure what sets the stain and what keeps the stain from setting so you can wash them later. Something sets it, but I don't know what that
water.
Is.
Hot water. You don't want to use warm water. You don't want to wash it and dry it in the dryer without treating it at all. And hot water will set protein.
So do I like
so if you got blood or food that has any kind of protein in it, hot water will
so
actually
if I'm at work,
set up.
Do I use cold water?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And do I use soap?
You could, sure.
That's not going to set it.
I often do. No,
I never know.
Soap will help take it out.
Okay. It's all very confusing.
I'm a big fan of the at home of the Oxy. The
Billy Mays stuff?
It's kind of the Billy Mays stuff. The Oxy thing has become mainstream now, so I have some kind of Clorox or one of those things that's actually for stain removal, but it has the hydrogen peroxide in it. So it says Oxy Fresh on it, and it's a spray. And so because it has the hydrogen peroxide, you spray it directly on the stain, and it goes, and it bubbles up and starts eating away at the stain. And that stuff works really, really well.
So it's sort of a, similar to OxyClean. You know, it's one of those, like, if you like, you'll love. All right.
Yeah, I think they managed to license OxyClean as... A name that's allowed to be used in other kinds of products now, because there's also like cleansers for your cabinets and countertops as well that say Oxy something on them as well. So.
All right. Hey, somebody's asking if Bridesmaids has Kristen Wiig in it.
It does.
Or wig.
Yes, it does.
Okay. All right. Just checking. All right. Well, we should do this. We're going to come back with a guest who will talk about Thing happening at a time in the indeterminate future.
Yes.
Oh, very exciting. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. I don't think I've done any of my other stuff, but it doesn't matter. We'll take a break, come back after this. We've done this a lot lately, but we're talking for like 40 minutes about just, you know, bupkis.
Some people seem to like that part best of the show.
No. They like the guests best, Dawn.
Well, other people like the guests best.
It's ruined by our presence on the, or so I'm told by Facebook.com/Rick Emerson Show, which, see, and that's a thing that you think I would go to because my name's in it, and yet I never see that either. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back after this. Don't go anywhere. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Stay right there, won't you, please?
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
But I
to the Emerson News Network. You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Here's the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for joining us. 503-505-6964 if you'd like to be part of today's program, and I know you would. That is 503-505-6964, and you can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. That is rick@rickemerson.com. Dawn Taylor can also be emailed if that's your thing, if that's your pleasure. That's dawn@rickemerson.com. And, of course, you can Skype at Rick Emerson Show. That is all one word, Rick Emerson Show. And in text via the website as well. By the way, there's more.
Or you could
on,
just put a note in a bottle and leave it somewhere in Southeast Division, and we'll find it.
Or you could just, do some sort of remote viewing. You know, just think it really hard. Although that always ends up just going to Art Bell, and then he has to like pass it our way, and then it becomes a whole thing. Just incidentally, more on Paula Marshall, who has a little secret crush on me. So she was on the Wonder Years. She had like a 3-episode guest arc on the Wonder Years, and it's frustratingly, here's the failing of Wikipedia and of Internet Movie Database is when they list guest appearances, they never actually say playing the part of, and then it's like, and that's the thing is that's who you need it for, because it's like obviously you know that Fred Savage, like you know who he was playing, but I have no idea, and it would have been 1992.
You never know, though. You type in Paula Marshall, YouTube, Paula Marshall Wonder Years. Maybe there is some Paula Marshall freak out there who has excerpted some of her scenes and put them on YouTube, and then you could see it.
And then we could be, and then...
Because that's only ever so slightly stalkerish.
I was going to say, and then we could just take turns sitting in the shrubs outside her house and waiting for her to leave. Not really. Also, and just final note here about Paula Marshall. So immediately before she was on Sports Night, which is one of the first times I really became aware of her, because she played Jenny, who was the sort of short-lived love interest of the character of Jeremy, Josh Molina, on Sports Night. She was also on Cupid with Jeremy Piven, which
yes.
is really one
yes,
of the great, I mean, underappreciated and prematurely canceled programs like of our time. And not that Jeremy Piven's not great on you know, like Entourage, or whatever else, but Cupid was actually. Cupid was a really, really great show, and one of those shows that just sort of like, as I watched, Cupid was one of the very first instances where I was watching a show going, and it's great. Hey, honey, come check out this great show that they're going to cancel like next week. It's awesome. So, you're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Coming up later on the day, we got your Taser Watch, also Geek Watch coming up, and we'll talk about last night's installment of House coming up this weekend,
and also Penis Watch. But I don't think you wanted to say that in front of Holly.
Well, you know, I find that I like to surprise people with the Penis Watch. I find that that's a dish that's best served suddenly and without warning. You know.
Woohoo! Surprise, penis.
On the show, as in life, Don.
Yes.
You find that you want to just, you don't want to tell them about the penis up front.
Spring it on people.
Yeah, no, because often then they just, you know, they don't stick around for it if you tell them that's what's coming later on.
Oh, it got ugly.
It's all
so
gone
fast.
So very, very awkward. So coming up this weekend is going to be Wonder Northwest. You can find out more about that at Wonder NW. And it's WONDERNW, WonderNW.com. Wonder Northwest, which is a pop culture exposition. Is that what expo stands for in this case?
Yes.
Exposition. I didn't go anywhere with that. That wasn't even a word.
No. Expository? Something entirely different.
Explosion. our good friend Billy Galaxy putting that together, and it's going to be running this weekend, Saturday, Sunday. You can find out more about it by going to wondernw.com. On Sunday, I'll be there doing the podcast panel. And then on a day that is either Sunday or Saturday, there'll be... And you, we'll actually welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show, Holly Reynolds. Hello, Holly. How are you?
Hi.
So this is where I'm going to... if there were a baton in my hand, I would be now handing it to Don, because...
yeah, he warned me ahead of time. It's like, okay, you're asking all the questions about this because I don't know what this
seriously,
is.
Seriously. Well, I mean, here's the thing. I want you to take you don't have to take a long look. Take a glancing look at me and just see, like, the jeans and the black T-shirt. This is the entirety of my wardrobe. So really, in terms of... Me and fashion don't really belong in the same sentence. That's decidedly unnatural. All I know about the Lolita fashion thing is that it's not what it sounds like. It's not like it's not a Nabokov Lolita thing.
No.
Don
no,
Taylor, tag.
Well, actually, since you're sitting here, why don't you tell the good people, explain to them, and of course to Rick Emerson, exactly what Lolita is.
And I want you to know, by the way, that even though Holly has pink hair, that I'm going to make it through this entire conversation without making a Gem or Tonks reference, just like FYI.
Congratulations.
Because people will ask later, Don, we should say, what celebrity would you say that Holly most resembles?
Oh, wow. She does look like someone, and I can't think of who it is at the moment.
Okay.
Because when I did meet her before, I did think that there was something about her that looked familiar, but I can't think of it right off the top of my head.
All right, so I will hand it off to Don.
All right, so a brief explanation is that Lolita fashion is a Japanese street fashion that began in the late 1970s as sort of response to people wearing more... so-called scandalous clothing, and it focuses on modesty, and it's primarily inspired by the aesthetics of sort of Rococo and Victorian fashion, although it can branch way out, depending, but...
High-neck ruffled blouses and flouncy skirts.
So
flouncy skirts, lots of petticoats, sort of to get that cupcake shape to your skirt.
Hint of Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah.
Yes, okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Totally.
And I'm sorry, go ahead.
No. And actually, I dropped some photos in there.
I'll be posting those.
That you can take a look at, and you can also post them so people can take a look and get an idea of it. And it's very, very popular, not just in Japan now, but but all over the world.
Oh, yeah. So, over the last 10 years, I'd say it's gained
really
quite
reserved
a bit.
Clothing doesn't really seem like the first thing that springs to mind when one thinks of Japanese fashion.
Well, it's not. The thing is, though, it's Victorian influence, but it's not really reserved. It's like you've got this kind of almost Victorian steampunk kind of thing almost combined with anime. It's very cartoonish, but also just really sort of. Yeah, and also it's not just girls. Even though it's called Lolita, it's not just for the ladies. It's the boys' fashion falls into Lolita fashion as well.
Does this mean I have to start wearing like spats or something, or do I have to have
really every
so,
day?
Just like a silk hat and a cane and a monocle.
Maybe and there's also as
denim
I,
with spats.
There's also as I understand it, like sub genres. There's the gothic Lolita and there's like sailor Lolita. And,
oh yeah, all kinds of stuff.
Is Japanese fashion to some degree, at least the way it's presented to us through certain channels of fandom in the West, it's like that whole thing with the fortune cookie where you just add like in bed to the end of it. Do you just add like as a sailor or something to the end of like half the stuff that comes out of Japan? It just seems like something they have a predilection for sailor type clothing.
Fill in the blank here with tentacles.
Exactly. I mean, it just, I don't really know, but I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, a lot of the school uniforms represent sailor stuff, and I think they're cute looking, so... That's why people like them. Why I like them.
This is why I was going to recuse myself from the conversation, because I weigh in and I ask and she goes right to schoolgirl, and then it's like if I say anything, then it's like I'm back outside Paula Marshall's house with like a stun gun and a bag. All right. I'm looking at them. I'm looking at some of this now, so I'm going to get this posted at rickemerson.com/pictures/visual aids for June, for May 10th. That is rickemerson.com/pictures/visual aids for May 10th. And I have to say this actually, unsurprisingly, I guess, it's actually really cool looking. Like some of the first stuff that came up is, it looks, you said gothic, but it has that kind of Nightmare Before Christmas sort of, everything is sort of stripey and black and white and gray,
which
is kind of, it's actually really, really cool. It's almost like, you know what it is? It's almost like a
Nightmare Before Christmas is very big in that. In fact, one of these pictures that I put in here, she's holding a Jack Skellington doll,
and it almost has like it's almost like this like a sort of weird like Asia by way of Edward Gorey. It's kind of a look which I dig,
stuff like that.
And mention you yourself are wearing.
I'm wearing black, but I wouldn't consider this gothic.
No, but I mean, but it is. Sweet. It does fit in the whole whole thing. You get a big flouncy, kind of ivory skirt with lace on it, but a black high neck kind of a thing, and the pink hair, and it's all, and the adorable pattern stockings, and it's all very cool.
Let's all do each other's hair.
Yeah.
All
right. So what can we expect from the actual fashion show?
About 10 people who volunteer to model for me are from around the Northwest community that are into Lolita fashion, so I'm hoping to see a bunch of people dressed in all kinds of different styles.
This is like a thing that would not have been possible without the internet, because even if you were, if you were into this, or if you had like read about it, or if you had subscribed to overseas magazines or something, you would probably still like be the only person in your town, or think you were the only person in your town that was sort of into this. Mm-hmm. Has this existed for a long time in Japan, and we're just sort of, it is just now kind of coming to the States, or is it a new phenomenon there as well?
I'd say within the past decade, it's become more popular in the States as the Japanese brands that sell Lolita clothing started selling their stuff on websites, so people could buy their stuff from around the world. And they started doing international shipping recently, so that's increased the popularity. But before then, I don't believe many people outside of Japan wore it.
I got to say that as unfashionable as I usually feel, this is just this proves to me that I can just never go to Japan, or in fact anywhere outside of here in my home, because I will look even more dull than I typically do.
Oh, yeah. Everyone in Japan seems to be, like, extremely fashionable. I always feel so dressed down.
And the thing that's so cool about this, though, too, is that, like Holly said, it's a sort of a response to just sort of the skanky, over-sexualized clothing. So it's all very cute or elegant, rather than being sexy. Or whatever, what passes for sexy.
Well, it's what scientists would call a de-skankification process. Don, that's the clinical term for it. That's how they that's in the laboratory. That's what they call it.
If only they had gone with that instead of Lolita.
I don't... I've had like 1,000 people ask me this. So the we started the show by saying, well, you know, we talk about Lolita fashion, and I, you know, and I've been saying like, which is not what it sounds like. So, what is it? Why do they call it that if it's not what we typically associate? Because Lolita obviously classically is associated with very young girls. So, if it's not that, then why that name?
Well, I think it's sort of when it came up with the name in Japanese people. I hate to sound like grouping people into one group.
Oh, do it.
Japanese in general sort of took the word because they did associate it with little girls, and the fashion does sort of resemble youth, but not in a sexual way at all. Just sort of like,
so if like if you were a young girl in like Dickensian London, where you were wrapped in like 17 layers of button-up petticoat like, before you left the house,
stuff like that, but absolutely nothing to do with the book at all.
By the way, just speaking of nothing to do with the book, this is the reason why we keep the computer screen angled away from guests sometimes, because we get this. Rick, quit talking. I want to hear more of her cute voice. I mean, I don't mean to be creepy or anything, but come on. So, you know, there you go. Sorry.
Well, again, you brought a magazine if you wanted to.
Yeah. Nothing
like Visual Aids during a radio
visual
show.
Visual Aids during radio show. It's great. But, yeah, it's just a brand catalog, basically, that comes out once in a while.
Put something open and show it to Mr. Emerson.
Yes.
So
that I might know how to present myself more fashionably.
Pages of clothes that are laid flat.
Okay, you know what this looks like? This looks like when I had that, and it's lapsed for some reason. I got to get them. It's like when I had that subscription to Gothic Beauty magazine.
Yeah.
That's what. That's a lot of what this reminds. And I realized I just lowered my voice and did the creepy, very white thing just there. So sorry about that. But that's kind of what this reminds me of. Somebody's asking, and you may have already said this. What day is this happening, or is it both days?
Oh, it's on Sunday. At 4 o'clock. From 4 to 4 o'clock
right,
to 4:45.
So, come for the Rick, stay for the fashion. So Sunday, 4 p.m. Wonder Northwest. Did you bring a festive party hat for me to wear?
Yeah.
Look at us.
Hey, can I use this to make other people feel irrelevant and unimportant?
Oh yeah.
Can I wave this angrily at them?
Excellent. You can do whatever you want with it.
Awesome.
Well, I felt very superior when I was at Geek Trivia this week, because we placed in the top third in both rounds and won passes. And I was able to just look at my teammates and go, oh, I'm already going to be there anyway as a guest. So if you want this, I don't need this. Please help yourself. So I felt very special.
You can find out more about Wonder Northwest by going to WonderNW. That is WonderNW.com. And I guess if somebody wants to find out more about this, it seems probably just Googling Lolita again is going to get a knock at the door from somebody.
Lolita fashion will get
Is that the phrase you want to look for? Or Holly, what would you recommend if people want to know more about
LolitaFashion.org is a really good place to start. It has a sort of an introduction to the style, where you can buy the clothes, what each style is, like sweet and gothic and classic and all the other.
Is this stuff you have to import? Do they sell it here, or do you have to like get it sent over?
If you want Japanese stuff, you got to get it sent over.
So it's not like you can just go to, there aren't a lot of like other places here in the States where you can order it from, or that, you know, that stock it at least, that you can get it sent to you, or is it? Because it seems like it'd be really expensive.
There are independent or American brands that sells Lolita clothing as well. Like I bought my skirt from Candy Violet, which is an American Lolita brand, or it was for a while. It just sells retro clothes now. And actually, two Lolita brands opened up stores in San Francisco. So you can drive down to San Francisco and buy some there, but really, you have to import it.
And so it's LolitaFashion.org. Mm-hmm. Is it, I mean, apart from leaving aside the actual like cost of shipping and everything, is it expensive stuff in general? Because it's not like, I mean, it's like layers and layers. I mean, it's a lot of clothing, some of these things. Is it pricey?
Yeah.
Is it?
It's pretty high. It's pretty pricey.
Is it a thing that's going to become more mainstream here at all? Or is it going to stay very niche? Or is it one of those things that'll kind of catch on, do you think?
I don't think it'll ever become mainstream. I mean, if you look at it, most people think it's ridiculous. A couple of celebrities have worn it. Like, I think Lady Gaga wore it once, and even people said she looked ridiculous, but I think people said she looked more ridiculous, and then a couple other celebrities wore it, and they got tons of criticism for dressing stupid.
The idea of Lady Gaga putting on clothing that would actually seem ridiculous on her is sort of interesting because she sets the bar rather high for that.
Probably because she was wearing more clothes than usual.
That's probably the biggest reason why it won't catch on here is because we are trending in the opposite direction from the cover up.
Which is kind of strange because I could see it actually doing well in Portland because we already are a place where people really like wearing floofy skirts and striped leggings
and
hand warmers, fingerless gloves and things like that. So, you know, it's not that much of a step to just sort of, you know, tweak it a little bit to go in that direction.
Yeah, people in Portland already have a pretty big fascination with Victorian fashion and all that. Yeah. I mean, there's also SteamCon that happens in Washington every year.
Yeah.
And that's just steampunk stuff. And that's inspired by the Victorian aesthetic. So.
Well, this is, and that was the first thing I thought when I saw some of this, is it does have kind of that, it has sort of that weird then and now blended together kind of thing that steampunk does, a lot of. So I'm just going to start wearing one of those snap brim hats and just saying governor. And that'll be the extent of my.
I think you need a bowler.
Like a sort of like a droog bowler?
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's see what I can do. So that is coming up this Sunday, 4 p.m. at Wonder Northwest. Find out more about that by going to wondernw.com. That is wondernw.com, Wonder Northwest, the Portland Comics and Pop Culture Expo. That is actually this Saturday and this Sunday. And again, you can see more pictures of what we were just talking about at rickemerson.com/pictures, visual aids for May 10th. That is rickemerson.com/pictures, visual aids for May 10th. So, Holly Reynolds, thank you for coming in, Holly.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
We're going to do this. We will be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Rick Emerson radio program. We continue things around the corner. Stay right there, won't you?
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
He was killed by a cellular phone explosion. They scattered his ashes across the ocean. The water was used to make baby lotion. The wheels of promotion were set into motion. But the sun still shines in the summertime. I'll be yours if you'll be mine. Tried to change, but I changed my mind. Think I'll have another glass of Mexican wine. To change, but I changed my mind. Think I'll have another glass of Mexican wine because the sun still shines in the summertime. I'll be yours if you'll be mine. I tried to change, but I changed my mind. Think I'll have another glass of Mexican wine. Mexican wine. Won't you have another glass of Mexican wine?
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
I figured it out. Anna Paquin.
Yeah, a little bit.
Not True Blood Anna Paquin. Like Almost Famous.
Yeah.
Anna Paquin, when she played Tinkerbell or whatever her name was.
Tinkerbell.
She was one of the Band-Aids. She was always wearing that big Paddington hat. And then at the end she goes on the road with Deep Purple. That's the celebrity I was thinking of, Holly. So we've got.
She was adorable.
She really was. Okay, but let me ask you this. I mean, this is just one of those things I'm asking because I honestly don't know, and I couldn't even begin to guess. All right, how old would you guess she was? Because that was one of the things where I was like, she could have been 29, and she could have been like 17. I have no idea.
Somewhere in their mid-20s, early to mid-20s, I'm thinking.
Yeah, I got nothing. I mean, she probably, wasn't, like 29 or 17, but
no.
I have no way to assess. That's the thing about that clothing. It totally throws you off. It's like if you ever meet somebody who has no eyebrows, you can't tell how old they are. Mm. You're removing your eyebrows. That is a way just to cover your tracks, chronologically speaking.
Plus, it's one of those fashion things that you kind of have to be slender and petite to carry it off. Because otherwise, it's like, can you imagine me dressed like that?
Hi.
That would just be ridiculous.
I'm here to model Lolita fashion for you. That's not my impression of you. That's just my impression of it.
But that's how it would look, though. Like, look at me in my adorable striped stockings and my little floofy skirt.
Aren't I a delicate flower?
Yeah, it really wouldn't work.
How sweet is the flowering peach of womanhood? So I won't even identify him because I don't want to. The guy who said, quit talking, Rick. I want to hear more of her cute voice. I don't mean to be creepy. Then followed up by saying, now here's what makes it worthwhile. He follows up by saying, are any of those pictures of this girl? And then he types, shh, afterward.
Well, I did just send off a photo, which may have gone to the posting thing. So.
And then the Dropbox?
Yeah. Not in the Dropbox. I think I tried to send it directly to the
directly to the thing.
All right.
I'll get that put up there.
See if that worked.
I'll get that put up in a second. All right. Anyway, so that is happening Sunday, 4 p.m., part of Wonder Northwest, which happens Saturday and Sunday. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program still to come. We'll do the Penis Watch. Let's see. And by the way, and you're right, I was sort of trying to exercise some kind of decorum by not going, coming up, Penis Watch. Also, we'll talk about vaginas. Also, we are going to talk about horrific nail gun injuries to the face. Hello, Holly.
Because she's sitting there with her pink hair and her little princess headband.
Seriously.
And her floofy skirt.
I mean,
she seems so sweet.
Yeah, I mean, we just opened the door and looked in the kitchen because I had no idea what to, and you know how it is. It's like, how do I put this? You know, sometimes it's like you talk to chicks who are like, goth, not even lifestyle, but dressed that way. And it's like sometimes, I don't want to say they have like a hard edge to them, but sometimes it's just like really intense looking.
Yeah.
Where it's like they're going to beat your ass, they're either going to do something really hot or they're going to like cut you with a razor or both. And she didn't, she was really, I mean, she did kind of have a whole sort of, like she was somehow lost looking for her grandmother's house in the woods being pursued by some sort of grim creature. So in any event, so we'll get a photograph of Holly Reynolds up on the website here in just a few. So it's not quite there yet, but it'll be up here in just a short while. Still to come. So we got Geek Watch, Penis Watch, Taser Watch, and so forth. Oh, and then, so I wanted to ask you this. Speaking of, and then, sorry, I spilled some ice cubes on my thing. We'll talk about last night's episode of House here in a few. But So I wanted to finish this conversation about you sponging things off of yourself. So this morning you were in the kitchen going...
By the way, we're talking and I'm trying to like send an email to the printer while we're talking. So it's like my multitasking is just like going through the roof now.
But you were in the kitchen sort of, and you said you'd spilled some things, you were sort of mopping some things off. But then later...
Yeah.
So it's like during Legion of News, I look over and it's like you're just picking things off of your décolletage.
Well, I was wearing this necklace that I love. It's this really super cheap necklace that I got from like Hot Topic or something, and it's a skull and crossbones, and then it's painted black and it's got some kind of little sparkly stuff on it, so that it's supposed to look like it's jeweled, but it's not. It's just sort of, you know,
while still being $5,
right? Yes. Right, and it's painted black. And I've had it for like a couple of years and have never had any issue with it. And I don't know if because it's so warm in here that I'm just a little extra sweaty today or whatever it is. But I was wearing it and I looked in and I just saw these little bits of black flecked stuff in my décolletage. And I said, what the hell is that? And I picked it up and I thought, did I spill more food on myself? But I couldn't think of what it could be. And then I looked down and there was more. And I realized it was like paint coming off of the back of the necklace and just sticking to my chest. And it wouldn't brush off because it was actually sticking to me.
Oh, so that's why you were kind of doing like, it was like when you're picking lint off your sweater, but it was not so much a sweater as it was your skin.
So I had to, when we took the break, I had to go into the bathroom and actually use like soap and water and a paper towel and scrub it off of myself.
All right, that's okay. Because I looked over it, it wasn't like you were just kind of going and brushing something. It was like a punk. It was like you're plucking hairs out, but I knew it wasn't that.
Yeah. I was trying to pick it off, but it was just, it was too, just... too crumbly in too many little bits.
Starting to believe that the Hot Topic jewelry didn't really have the quality construction that one might really. You got to upgrade it. Go to Claire's next time. I can't tell you, by the way, how many months the cumulative in high school I spent with like a green wrist because I would go to Claire's back. You know, but when I was still laboring under the illusion that if I just wore a wrist full of bangles that I would somehow become Robert Plant, and so I would just, you know, and I. You see a lot of photographs of me in high school, and I have the bad mullet, and then it's like I'm in various combinations of like bad rock wear, but then of course always, and I had, and at that point I was a sweet young thing with slender wrists, and I could just go and I could get like all of the, like the whatever the bangle thing, the bracelets like don't come apart, where it's like a magician's locking trick or something where they're hooked together permanently, but I could just put them on my hand. But it's like I didn't realize at the time that was just like the cheapest ass jewelry you could possibly get. I mean, I should have figured it out because they're like $2.
Yeah.
And you're getting like the whole – and then it's like I would just look down and it's like my wrist, you know, and I'm trying to be like a smooth, you know, talker to the ladies. And then it's like my wrist, it just looks like it's got gangrene. So that's no good. Incidentally, somebody says here that they are – and you probably knew this was coming. Cupid recently rebooted – with Will Truman's boyfriend in the Piven role. Will, is that the Will Truman? Is that Bobby Cannavale? Whatever that guy from Will and Grace?
Yeah.
So he's in the Piven role.
Yeah. And it was okay. The reboot was all right.
Now we're just rebooting things from like earlier today, basically.
I know.
Like it would have been so hard to just keep the goddamn show on the air in the first place. Mother effing ABC. Jesus.
Jeremy Piven is really interesting to me because Jeremy Piven is sort of the epitome of the kind of guy I always assumed I would end up with, but I didn't.
You mean him personally?
Just the kind
or his
of,
characters.
The characters, the kind of guy he plays, the kind of guy he is, what he looks like, because he fits into that sort of physical thing that I kind of like.
Give me an example of the kind of character.
Well, I always really liked guys that were really really sarcastic and really quick and really funny, but with kind of a slightly mean little bit of an edge. And then he also had that look that I like with the big nose and the high forehead and the stuff like that. So I think I always just assumed I would end up with somebody like that. But the fact is that whenever you get into a relationship with somebody like that, they're horrible.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. Is the people, this is a thing that you have to figure out at some point in your life, I think, when you are – this is one of the processes of self-actualization. This is, if there are such things as signposts on the road to when I was, I don't know, maybe like 12, 13 or something, my mom and I think, and I, you know, she had only the best intentions, I'm sure. But my my parents, you know, in lieu of awkwardly discussing, you know, the sex, my parents got me, some reading material on the subject, a book, which was going to teach me the ways of manhood. And I wish I'd still had it, actually, and I don't. But it was like by the single worst person that you could possibly – it was by Dr. James Dobson, who's the head of Focus on the Family, who's a religious nutcase. Now, I should say As I have noted many times over the however many years since this, my mom is much better now. She is no longer crazy. But there was a time when she was, I think, just this side of certifiable. And that manifested itself in a lot of ways, not just the Christianity, but one of them was like, but my mom just be, it was that whole thing. It was like the, it's like the last moments of any sort of belief system. Like the two biggest zealots, the two most fanatical kinds of zealots are people who are either A, recently converted to a belief system, or B, right at like the tail end of their time with that belief system, and they're clinging on to it like rats on the Titanic before they finally give up. And so I think a lot of people, specifically women, get this way with marriage, where it's like as they get to the end of like, you know, this relationship, realizing it's probably not going to work out, they just kind of dig in deeper and deeper, I think, for like, the last final Hail Mary pass of like making the whole thing work. And for my mom, that took the form of religion, where it was like the worse the marriage, like the bigger dick my father became, basically, like the more religious she got, because of course every time she would go to the church and go, hey, and then my husband, he's a dick, and then he keeps punching everybody. What do we do? And they go, well, you just need to pray harder, because clearly the answer is with your lack of piety. And so, so she became like more and more religious. Anyway, and long story short, she's past it. She is all better now. But when I was like, I don't know, maybe 12, 13, she got me this book called Preparing for Adolescence by Dr. James Dobson. And it was just, I mean, it was just full of like the worst advice and just the and like the vaguest, like most amorphous descriptions of the sex act. And I mean, in ways that, I mean, it was really like, it was like the literary equivalent of being shown sex by like two schmoos, you know, where you're like, there's no actual, like, you don't really know what anything is or what it might, or how to spot it in a lineup. Like how to pick it. Like I don't think, based on Dr. James Dobson's book with which I was armed for adolescence, I don't really know that I would have been able to pick a vagina out of like a lineup of just like
of just body parts.
A body part.
This is a spleen. Or like this is an elbow. This is a vagina.
And this is like the Hamburglar. And I don't think I would have. I mean, it would have been even odds. So, but the thing I remember about this Dr. James Dobson book, apart from its complete and utter lack of help with, you know, like figuring out what's what, is that the prologue to this book was, you're driving on a highway of, you know, and the highway is your life. And then you see this, you're driving on the highway of your life. Up ahead, you see a sign that says, Adultville, 1 mile.
Oh, gosh.
And it was all about, like, you know, making sure that the car is going to get you to, or that when you get to Adultville, you know where, like, the gas station is or something. I don't know. There's something happened in Adultville. Or on the way there,
you put enough oil in your car before you
make sure your crankcase is working properly. But I don't remember what happened at Adultville or why you had to be worried about, like, maybe you didn't want to miss the exit and just end up retarded. Now you're in retard town, and that's, you're in Dimville.
By the way, Retard Town was the name. Whenever I was like, I used to play Settlers of Catan like every week with friends, and whenever,
I like where this is going,
whenever things would like just be going badly for me, I would just decide I didn't care anymore, and I was like, because we make bad decisions here in Retard Town. And I just decided that's what my
awesome
area was called.
I just remember like reading the book and just like even then at like 12, when you believe, you know, a lot of stuff that you're just told because, hey, he's a doctor, you know, Dr. James Dobson.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, he must know. And but as you head toward Adultville or whatever, I think one of the things you realize is that not that you're just attracted to one kind of person typically. I think most people are attracted to more than one kind of person. But I think everybody does have a handful, you know, like two or three kind of the prime types that are, you know, that are attractive to you. You have, you know, and I think as time goes on, maybe you sort of, you winnow that down a little bit. But I think, you know, when you're like adolescence to, let's say, like maybe your mid to late 20s, I would say there are a handful of personality types to which you are drawn. But if there is such a thing as like a step toward actually being like a fully realized adult, I think one of those is realizing the difference between being attracted to somebody and being attracted to somebody with whom you have any chance of any kind of stable relationship, like at all, you know. And again, and it's not like you have to then end up with somebody that you're not attracted to for it to work. You just have to realize that they're not one and the same. That, you know, it's like when your dog wants to drink radiator fluid because it's sweet. here's the thing. Just because it tastes sweet going down doesn't mean it's not going to score out your insides and ruin your credit. And that is the thing you realize about certain, in my case, certain types of ladies. Where you go, wow, I am really, really attracted to you. You would be a terrible choice for me. Because you just see like, because you go like, wow, you're exactly the kind of girl that I would be into and who would set fire to all my things later on.
Yes.
And you have to sort of go, it's not unlike
what happens really when you get married. And if you are, you know, a reasonably intelligent human being and you're committed to monogamy, you know, there are many points along the way where you go, yes, I do. I am occasionally very attracted to other people, and I am choosing to do nothing about this.
Exactly.
You know, it's always fascinated by the whole mythology that once you get married, you're not supposed to ever find anyone attractive ever again. And also people who just apparently become so enamored with someone else that they end up like, you know, burning their whole relationship to the ground and dropping the spouse and running off with somebody. And I just always kind of felt like, you know, well, what if you just acknowledged, yeah, we're going to find other people attractive, but we've chosen not to do anything about it. That was kind of the point of getting married.
Yeah, well, and I think it's the people who live in denial of that that end up with like weird, you know, like bitter, like brittle, unhappy, and then splintery relationships where there's just no, because it is that thing again of like thinking you get in a relationship and then there's like some airlock that closes in your head, and you then and then you just don't.
These are the people
that
are out somewhere at like Target shopping or something, and the woman's like, I can't believe you were just looking at her butt.
Yes.
Like
yes.
What? So apparently,
what am I dead?
Apparently, butts are just like you will never notice another butt ever again.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, the thing is, and again, it's like I, you know, whatever. But it's you know, like, but we all know people who are in relationships like that too,
yeah.
Where it's like, you know, and guys are like that too. Guys get really like insanely, you know, insanely jealous. And I've talked about it. I used to, you know, when I was young, I used to be that way. And I, you know, that was like one of the single best things I ever did in my life. It was just, and I don't even remember how I did it. It wasn't like I just had some like long weekend of sitting in the woods and hitting a drum or something and like realizing my own inner nature. I don't think that there was like a moment of realization. I really don't. I don't remember any sort of like instant of clarity or where like I went, wait a minute, if I do that, then this happens. Oh, I should do something different. I honestly don't remember how it happened. But at some point, it was like one day I was like insanely jealous, like a-hole boyfriend guy. And then later on, I just had sort of moved past that. And I mean, that was like the single biggest thing that I ever did to improve my life, especially like relationships. It was just letting go of just like weird, irrational, insane jealousy.
Yeah, I think that just comes from learning to be secure in yourself. And once again, I think once you stop having crazy relationships, if you are actually with someone that you have an honest communication with and that you trust and you feel secure in yourself, there's absolutely no reason to be jealous. And it's just, you know, why would you be?
Yeah. And I can tell you, it's like every now and again, talking to somebody or meet somebody. And it's like you're doing that thing of like in the back of your head, you do go through that whole series of thoughts about like, wait a minute, I know you. I think I dated like 50 of your, 50 of your, you know, emotional twins like back in the 90s. And in that moment, it's like you simultaneously feel old, but then sort of relieved at the same time because you go, wait, because otherwise you're just like Homer Simpson, like touching the stove over and over and over again because his keys are sitting there. You know? And it's like you realize, wait a minute, okay, I'm going to choose B this time, not A. We'll see how that works out. And it works out with, again, you like not ending up in some psycho relationship. You know, where one of you was up at 2 a.m. on alternate nights, like holding a knife going, I'll end it right here, I swear, you know, and just you're like, okay, sorry.
Yeah. Well, it's also interesting. Like I was just thinking about this the other day. In fact, I was driving around. I've been listening to that new Decemberists album a lot. And listen, and he has just an excellent way of just his voice and the lyrics to the songs. And there is that wonderful sort of mournful relationship, every inch of my being is devoted to you, kind of a yearning kind of a thing, you know. And I remember I dated a few musicians, and I had a friend who actually married a fairly well-known guitarist, a guy in a band, and she made the great point once where she said that One of the reasons why being in a relationship with a musician sucked so bad was because they don't share any of their emotions with you. they just save everything for writing the songs.
Right.
And one of the reasons that they have so many relationships that crash and burn is because it makes for great lyrics.
Yeah. Well, that's like that whole Scott and Zelda Fitzgerald thing, where it was at one point F. Scott Fitzgerald actually, and they're like the archetype of the 20th century unstable couple, where he would and they were, you know, just like raging boozers and whatever. And they got to this point in their relationship where Scott Fitzgerald would actually push Zelda like into these trysts with other men. He would sort of like push her into affairs and kind of browbeat her into having very sexually adventurous open relationship, which by all accounts she didn't initially want, and he kind of pushed her into it because he wanted to have stuff to write about. And it was because then something would end up going horribly wrong, either with her and the other guy, or the three of them, or him and her, and then he would be like, and it'll make a fantastic novella. And I think that guys in bands, as Liv Tyler says, Jimmy, you just save it all for your songs.
Yeah.
So and the other thing is, like, and I think the other thing that for me, and I think for a lot of guys, is that. And guys and artists, guys who are artists are especially bad with this, where it's like you're at that stage in your life, and I think a lot of guys never get out of this, where it's like whoever you – like you want your girlfriend or your wife or whoever you're with, you want their whole life – like your whole life is about you, and then you also want their whole life to be about you. Like their entire existence, they just have to – you just have to pretend to be the sun that they orbit around. Mm-hmm. And I finally got to this point in my life where I realized, it just ended badly, and also it was just – and then it was just like exhausting. It was exhausting because even if you found somebody who was sort of, you know, because like for every effed up guy, there's some effed up girl looking for exactly that type. I mean, what is the Shel Silverstein book, The Big O and The Missing Piece or the whatever? Mm. There's always somebody looking for exactly what you're selling, even if neither of you really needs it or should have it. but, you know, so it's like I would this whole thing of like that your whole existence will just be a reflection. I will be the sun that illuminates you. You will be the dark moon without your own source of light. I will, you know, your whole existence shall depend upon me. Which after a while you just realize it's just so draining and so exhausting because you can find women like that. They are out there. But then you just become exhausted and resentful and whatever for having to like be a support system for two people. And then also you reach some inevitable point where she finally just snaps out of it one day and realizes what an a-hole you are for expecting that. And then it just implodes. And
well, and the alternative to that as well, there's also the situation that I always found myself in where I have a big personality and a huge ego, and I've always been attracted to men. I've been one of the types I've been continually attracted to over the years were men who also had big personalities and huge egos. And the thing is, you know, when someone like me is with a guy like that, that like, well, I'm going to be the star of the relationship and everything's, and then everything becomes like, no, and you little lady are going to continually fail because you're not allowed to succeed because then you might outshine me.
Outshine me.
And yeah. It's kind of like, really? Really?
Yeah.
And then you start realizing, oh, wow, this is really abusive, the way you keep just telling me I'm useless and shoving me down because you got to be the fancy one.
Why are we talking about this?
I don't know.
I have no idea where this came from.
It just went crazy.
I will just say that my final thought on that is that the other thing that I think happens to guys who – and this is, I think, typically the way the dynamic works, where it's the guy who wants some woman who is, you know, who is totally, you know, sort of like subservient to him and where her whole, you know – I think a lot of guys – and these are the guys who always end up like importing a wife from the Philippines, like in a box. That's, you know, it's like when – that – I mean
– yeah. Or they buy themselves a Russian chick.
Yeah, there might be exceptions to that. But it's like every time I've ever met some guy, and he's like, I'd like you to meet my wife, Imelda. She came in a crate from a small factory in Belize that churns out wives. And typically, not always, but typically, and I was this way too, where it's like you want a woman, again, whose whole sort of existence is around you. But what always happens, or what always happened with me anyway, because like the single biggest turnoff to me, this is one of those things that because I know you do the James Lipton quiz in your head, or like when you're on inside at the Actors Studio and he goes, what is your favorite curse word? I think about that all the time. And there's that part in the quiz where he says, what turns you on, what turns you off? And the single biggest turnoff to me in terms of like personality is neediness. I mean, like neediness and clinginess. I mean, that is like deep woods off for attraction. Like neediness is the most repellent quality I can possibly imagine in a romantic partner. And so, but I would just engineer these relationships to fail because I would either deliberately seek out women who were just like so empty and unaccomplished feeling themselves that I would then by definition become the most important thing in their lives because I was paying attention to them, or I would I would just sort of over the course of the relationship just sort of browbeat and insist that it had to be that way, that I had to, there was only one star in this show and his name was Rick. And but then I was that, and every guy liked that. The problem with that is then you are the equivalent of the woman who makes over the boyfriend into the guy she doesn't want, because every time then, as soon as you get a woman who actually has no hopes, dreams, desires, or aspirations of her own, and her whole existence is about you, then you just like have contempt for her because she's just this tiny, unaccomplished worm of a woman, when of course that's exactly what you were looking for in the first place. And so it just becomes, and then I had this moment of clarity where I thought, wait a minute. What if I dated women who had their own thoughts and who actually had ambitions for themselves? What if I dated a woman who was slightly independent? What would that be like? And so, it took me 25 years or whatever to get to the point where that was the thing that I would, you know, that seemed like a good idea. So I have no idea what we're talking about. Was it because we're talking about Whitney Houston? Jeremy Piven.
Jeremy Piven.
Bam!
You never got to the Whitney Houston thing. We need to hear that.
I'll do it right now. Hold on. Let's see. Do I have...
We've done no news today, by the way, and you still haven't heard my Daniel Baldwin anecdote.
God damn it. All right. Well, let me do this, and then we'll do your Daniel Baldwin, not Alec Baldwin. Your Daniel Baldwin anecdote. That's what I was... all right. What's not going to get a soundbite that... let's see. We'll just do this. Just going to make this my go-to newspaper. Now, we had this story last hour about Whitney Houston being back in rehab. And so there's really nothing here that's new except for this one line. And this is from MTV.com. This is from MTVNews.com. Whitney Houston, and I wonder if this is intentional or not, or if this is just like, if this is the world in which we live. Whitney Houston back in rehab asks fans ask for support. Whitney Houston checked into a drug and alcohol rehab facility. A spokesperson for the I Will Always Love You diva confirmed to MTV News on Monday that Houston is undergoing treatment in an outpatient program. Because that seems like where she belongs, an outpatient program.
Yeah.
No, go home. We'll trust you. Don't do any drugs while you're at home. For drug and alcohol issues on a voluntary basis. That's where the best rehabilitation for Whitney Houston is always going to be done. Voluntary. As part of her long-standing recovery process.
Meaning in and out of rehab over and over and over again.
The troubled singer who has struggled with, I don't think it's been much of a struggle, I think the drugs pinned her in the first 2 minutes of the match, struggled with drugs and alcohol on and off for years, has been trying to reboot her once soaring musical career for much of the past decade. Houston, 47, entered rehab in 2004 and again in 2005, has admitted to substance abuse problems, but said around the time of her 2009 album release that she was feeling stronger and focused on her sobriety. According to USA Today, Angela Bassett, Houston's co-star in the 1995 hit film Waiting to Exhale, said his sequel is in the works.
To Waiting to Exhale?
Yes. Mm. And that the entire original cast, presumably including Houston, is expected to appear in the film version of the follow-up novel, Getting Too Happy. Fans came out to fully support the singer in her time of need. Quote, "Good luck to you, Whitney. This is not an easy disease to kick. Be strong," end quote, tweeted Dog Fart. Once again, fans coming out to support Whitney Houston.
Dog Fart.
Dog Fart.
Yeah.
It's all worth it just to get to that one line.
Wow.
I printed that. I saw this last night, and I immediately printed it out, and I clutched it to my bosom all the morning.
I know, you
through.
Were so giddy, because I told the show, did you get that for an empty? Oh, I mean,
why would you put that? I mean, whoever wrote this, well, there's no byline on this. So somebody, I think this is one of the bits of falling out from, like, the whole Huffington Post AOL. Like, is it, like, you can no longer tell who wrote anything, because it's all, because there's just like three guys chained to a desk somewhere in a basement in South Korea just churning out all this news. But I mean, of all of the people on Twitter, I mean, there's got to be more than just Dog Fart tweeting about Whitney Houston, right? Like, he can't be the only person showing support.
Yeah.
So I wonder what else Dog Fart has said. I should look up his or her tweets and just see what else it might have been expressed on that particular Twitter feed. But there you go. So she's on the mend with the emotional support of Dog Fart. Et al.
Yes.
All right. At the news desk, here is Don Taylor.
And now,
from the news desk, this...
I hope he'll support
Don
me
Taylor.
When my time comes.
Before sentencing a former school bus driver to prison for molesting young boys, a judge ridiculed the defendant for claiming to be heterosexual. I think you were born gayer than a sweet-smelling jockstrap, Judge Philip Kirk of Waupaca told Delton Gorges, 71, before sending him to prison for 7 years on counts of sexual assault of a child,
wow.
repeated sexual assault of a child, and two misdemeanor counts of fourth-degree sexual assault. He will serve 15 years of extended supervision after his prison release. Of course, he's 71 now, so we'll see how much it... Kirk said he believes Gorges was a victim of a homophobic society in the 40s and 50s. The judge said...
Oh, I see. So he's saying this is some sort of a suppressed whatever that then took a perverse turn and manifested itself as a crime or criminal behavior.
And the defendant said he was straight.
Okay.
Yeah, right. And so the judge said, I think you were born gayer than a sweet-smelling drugstop. He said, no one knew there was a closet to come out of in those days. The judge said, you had to be very careful because you could have found your penis floating in the wolf as walleye bait. I guess the wolf is a river. It was a terrible life to have to live.
Is this a little bit of an overshare on the part of, is somebody projecting a little bit of something?
Maybe, I don't know. Kirk added, I think if anyone believes in the last 10 or 15 years, all of a sudden you developed an interest in homosexuality in young boys, then I must have looked ravishing in my prom dress this year.
Wow. Okay. All right. Excellent. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Gayer than a sweet-smelling jockstrap.
Yes.
Okay.
Back in the 40s and 50s, if you came out of the closet, you'd have found your penis floating in the river as walleye bait.
I heard the best thing that I forget who said. There was some comic, and he said, gayer than five guys effing six guys.
My favorite is something Mike Russell says once in a while. That stuff is gay as a tangerine.
Gay as a tangerine is good. I always go with parade, but tangerine is. I think tangerine might be my new parade. All right, I'm going to write that down. Gay as a tangerine.
Gay as a tangerine.
All right. Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
Let's do our Geek Watch.
Here's your Geek Watch.
This high-speed modem is intolerably slow.
In the Quasar Dilemma, remember you used to...
Just a television show. That's all, okay?
Right, but because we were wondering if the quantum flux... And just listen on
there. There is no quantum flux. There's no auxiliary. There's no goddamn ship. You got it?
Energize.
There is Don Taylor with your Geek Watch for Tuesday.
Activision Blizzard is set to launch a new Call of Duty game for consoles alongside an ambitious digital platform later this year. Executives have expressed an especially keen excitement about the new platform features. Activision execs named Call of Duty as one of two significant investments that Activision is making, which will include the company's largest marketing campaign. Activision Blizzard CEO Bobby Kotick said they're also working on Diablo 3. They've been working on Diablo 3 for like 5 years.
Wow. Jesus. How about that new Hexen game? Get that out there, too.
And a new massively multiplayer online game franchise unrelated to World of Warcraft. So they said...
Diablo 3. I mean, when did Diablo... The last one came out like... What, like 1994
I know,
or something?
And I loved Diablo. And I loved Diablo 2, and I loved the expansion pack. I loved Diablo. And it's one of the few games that I actually am completely geeky about. And it's like they've been promising Diablo 3 forever. And you go to their website, and they show you the new character classes, and they show you screen caps, and they show you little animatics and stuff. And you're like, oh, this looks like it's going to be awesome, and it's like, and they keep going just 6 more months, and it's been like.
And so this is Activision buying Blizzard. Or this is Blizzard.
Yeah, which I guess is owned by Activision.
Okay, so Blizzard is part of Activision.
Right.
Okay, that's the thing I didn't get there. So this is, but it makes you wonder. It's like for all those games though, it's like there must be. They must do research on that and figure that there are enough people out there who are either A, old school gamers who remember playing, like in this case, Diablo, and new school gamers who maybe aren't familiar with it but who are interested in games. In other words, to whom that game would appeal even if they'd never played any of the originals. But here's the thing about it is like Valve – they have pioneered the whole idea of direct delivery games via Steam, where you don't have to go to the store necessarily. They do it basically with like they do with eBooks, where like you can just get a game sent to your computer, which means that you can now sell a game for like $7, yeah, which means if you're a smaller or indie company and you're selling niche games, so like you can cater to that to specific audience, like the GoldenEye 64 audience or something. You can just be selling them crap directly because you don't have to like – the economy of scale is such that you can, you know, you can just send it right to them. And so you say – and there's another massively multiplayer game that's not Warcraft?
Yeah, and they're also – apparently they're also working on a an online – what are they doing? It's kind of hard to tell
from this.
Is it a
Commander Keen sequel?
Well, they did say that the new entry in the Call of Duty series will be released this year, and that's not no surprise. Everybody kind of knew. They've introduced a new game in the franchise every year since 2005.
How is that even possible? I mean, I don't – I mean, obviously it is – I mean, is it such that like – in other words, how do I put this? Are they working on 2016's Call of Duty like now?
Oh yeah.
And 2017's Call of Duty they'll work on next year. Like they, because I think if these are like you hear about Pixar films take like 5 years to make. And it's gotta take a long time to make like a, you know, one of those Call of Duty games. So I mean they must be doing that like 2, 3, 4 years in advance, which actually takes some stones when you think about it, when you consider the fact that when they first put the game out, they never know if it's going to be a hit or not, yet they're already planning sequels. They have to be.
Well, they're doing a – and I don't know if it's hard to tell from reading this. I got this from CNN. Because they are going to do another massive multiplayer online game. Now, Call of Duty, you can play against other people, but it's not really an MMOG, is
No, because it's not a persistent game.
Because I think that's what they're saying, is that they're going to be doing that, because they're saying that there's going to be new services and capabilities that'll be provided free of charge to all the Call of Duty customers. And they said the Call of Duty online service has been in development for 2 years under the name Project Beachhead. And the company actually created a separate group called Beachhead to focus full attention on an online Call of Duty game.
I think the distinction is that as a like a Call of Duty has a big online user base, yeah, just like, you know, just like anything, just like the Halo or Left 4 Dead or whatever, any of those games. But I think the difference is that when you log on to play Call of Duty, it is not a persistent world. When you log, you know, it's not like Warcraft where. Even when you're not logged on, I mean, if you log off of Warcraft and go home, the world as you, yeah, were just playing in it still exists, and it continues to exist as its own separate sphere. Whereas I don't think Call of Duty is that. It is not a totally immersive world that persists. It's just individual. Yes, it's individual matches, and even if it's an individual campaign with a lot of different people, in other words, when you're playing Call of Duty, if everybody involved in your Call of Duty game were to log off, that world would vanish and be created again from scratch when you logged, yeah, in again. Warcraft, you know, Azeroth just stays there like forever, even if you log out. So that's probably going to be the way that more and more things go. That seems like the ultimate franchise, where you take any game, and if it gets big enough, you ultimately turn it into a MMORGB, because then if you think of it, because once you do that, then it's like you've just got them in this fully immersed. This fully immersive world where there are then by definition infinite other ways to sell them things and where they don't ever need to leave. Here's a strange thing. I was thinking about this the other day. I was thinking about AOL and how they still exist and do stuff. The idea that we've had this sort of bell curve development with the internet, because if you remember in the early days of the World Wide Web anyway, when you would go on to AOL, if you knew anybody who had an AOL account or if you did, the thing about AOL is AOL wasn't really the internet as such. AOL was this sort of walled-off compound, and it was like sitting in like – you know what AOL was like? AOL – I was going to compare it to Bin Laden's hideout in Pakistan, but that's probably – AOL was like you were just sitting in like a retirement center or one of those planned communities, and there were huge walls. And anytime you wanted something, you would just like send a guy out to the outside world to bring it to you. Yeah. You couldn't actually leave or go outside. But if you go like, I want to know about Godzilla, and you go, okay. And he'd leave the walled compound and go down the street to the library, get you the Godzilla book, and then bring it back and give it to you. AOL was this very closed-in world, and it wasn't the broader internet as such. They tried to keep everybody walled off in this compound. And then now, of course, the internet is, you know, it's where there's nothing like that. You just go, everything is a series of distinct and discrete web pages. But then massively multiplayer online role-playing games are doing the same thing that AOL did, where they are trying to pull you in and to keep you in this one world where all of your different sort of needs will be met by different facets of that company and of the game. That's like the whole thing with Second Life. I mean, you think about it, Second Life is basically just like living inside that AOL compound in a weird way.
Second Life had potential because Second Life almost was – I remember when – at some point when I – brief period when I played The Sims, I remember thinking that the thing The Sims lacked was integration. And I guess now you can do that. You can create Sims and you can go online and
yeah.
you can – but I thought that that's really what you should be doing with this stuff, is that you should be able to integrate some of these games, like, you know, create your Sims neighborhood and then walk down the street and go to somebody else's Sims neighborhood. And then you have something like Roller Coaster Tycoon, where you create a theme park and then somebody – can like take their Sims into your roller coaster park.
They all interconnect.
That you created.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, all of that stuff, if you're going to have these massive online worlds, it seems like it would be awesome if they really were, you know, integrated in such a way. And they don't have to be just about running around killing things. It seems like The Sims would be awesome for that. But that's never really taken off to the degree that it seems like it ought to.
And that sort of is like the Second Life thing. Because I remember like when
Second Life, it really is ends up just being like a whole bunch of people having furry sex and flying around and, you know, and having virtual shoe stores. It's just ridiculous.
It is I think here's the thing about when you boil it down like that, that's like totally inaccurate and yet it's completely accurate at the same time. Like, it's obviously not that, but yet it kind of is, really. I mean, it's like there's nothing. I mean, that is in spirit. That is a totally accurate. Because when Second Life first came out, I was really fascinated by it. And there was like that week and a half where like all the marketers were like, hey, the Red Hot Chili Peppers have got a new record coming out, and we have booked them a performance in Second Life. And, like, that was, like, the big thing that was going to, like, you know, turn everything around, you know, for anybody trying to sell anything. You were going to be able to do it on a stage in Second Life. And there was, like, about a day and a half where I thought, does the Rick Emerson Show need to have a radio station in Second Life? And then, like, later that day, I was like, well, no, that's retarded, you know, and I just decided not to do it. But I remember reading this article.
If the Rick Emerson Show had a furry sex club in Second Life.
Some people talk about Second Life, and I remember one of them was like trying to figure out what it was. He goes, well, what do you do there? Like, is it a game? And the guy was like, well, it's not really a game. And, you know, well, what do you do? Well, you just sort of, you know, you live and you shop and you have a little business and you go home and then you sleep. And the guy's like, no, I mean in Second Life, what do you do? And the guy's like, well, you know, that's Second Life. Yeah.
You can look like a fox or a fairy or an orc and you could have wings.
And that was the thing, is like it became so clear by hearing this guy try to explain what Second Life was to this guy who didn't know it. That was the thing that I think sort of brought it into stark relief for me.
It is one of the best named platforms ever.
It really is, because it's totally accurate. And it was like, and as much as the guy tried to make it about something other than, and then I can have hot sex with these pixelated big boobed women, like, it was like quicksand. It was like the more he tried to explain that it was something else, it was apparent that it was just that. Mm. And also that his real life was, you know, like hella lame. So, you know, that's, you know, whatever.
I just always think of I think it was The Office when Dwight was on Second Life and he created an avatar that looked exactly like him and was also like a beet farmer and worked in an office. And I just found that delightful.
I remember reading the first articles about guys who were like, they were like, people were opening like virtual, like Second Life clothing stores, you know, and like so they could sell, you know, like tunics, you know, to some other, you know. It's a weird world. It really is it's a bizarre place in which we live. I don't mean like Second Life. I mean like the actual world is really weird. Hey, speaking of The Office real quickly before we close out, did you watch the thing, what's it, Steve Carell's, Michael's last episode?
Yeah,
what did you think of that?
It's okay.
Yeah, that was, you know, that was my thing too. I thought these people really liked it, and it was kind of a big meh to me.
The Office has become just The Office is something that I still find entertaining, but it's not a must see thing for me in any way. So I just watched it because it seemed, again, as we talked about, it seemed like one of those cultural moments that I should be aware of,
right?
But yeah, I didn't really care that much.
Yeah, it was. I was sort of just indifferent to the entire thing. So all right. Let's see. There's your Geek Watch for...
By Grafthar's hammer, by the sons of Warvan, I shall avenge you.
Next. Loneliness and cheeseburgers are a dangerous mix.
And by the way, since I was actually... before we do... let's see. We'll do a recap of House here in just a second. What is tomorrow? Tomorrow, Wednesday?
Tomorrow is Wednesday.
Damn, where does the time go? So tomorrow we'll be joined by Ms. Anna Griffin from the Oregonian. That is coming up tomorrow.
By the way, my lock screen picture on my phone is my dog with her Mr. Bill.
Isn't
that cute?
You know, here's what an idiot I am. When I was at the store the other day and I passed the dog toys. And, like, Philo already has, like, 1,000 toys. But it's like I saw the Mr. Bill thing, and it's like I was just tempted to buy it again, even though he already owns it. I mean, that's
what
an idiot
I am. Well, because eventually it'll wear out, and they might not sell them anymore when it wears out. Yeah, Bella loves her Mr. Bill toy.
Yeah,
she will go get him at certain times when she wants a specific type of attention, and walk into the room, and all of a sudden, and just keep biting it. So it just keeps. Oh no! Oh no! It's like, oh God, please put it down.
Let me see if I can just.
Listen.
Let me see if I can just get a little bit of.
Guy. Hey, Gwen.
Oh, hey, man! I want to.
I don't remember me, dude.
Van, I shall.
Okay, this is just that. I wanted to play this back. This is just that moment from the show opening where Alan Rickman is signing autographs, and there's that great moment where you hear the little marker squeak on the picture.
By Grabthar's hammer, by the sons of Warvan, I shall avenge you.
By Grabthar.
Next.
It's all right there. And it's all the, when he cuts the guy off and he just does the.
I grab the.
Next.
It's awesome. I love Alan Rickman. I love him, but you know. And I don't even know if he would care about this. That may be his best performance ever.
That and Hans Gruber. Those are his two best roles, I think.
Hans Gruber almost does. I mean, to me, that's almost, I guess it probably is Hans Gruber. But it's like his line readings in Galaxy Quest are just off the charts.
He was
good.
Also absolutely awesome in that god-awful Kevin Costner Robin Hood movie. And honestly, I remember that was on once, and I recorded on the TiVo, and I just fast-forwarded to all the Alan Rickman parts because it's a horrible, horrible movie. But his Prince John is just awesome.
I have only ever seen that movie once, and I saw it in the theater when it first came out, and that was it. And that's the only.
And cancel Christmas.
All I remember is he just, and because I think at the time people said, well, he's just doing the thing from Die Hard, but he's really not. He's kind of his own. It's its own character that he's playing there. All I remember about, I forgot even that line. All I remember about Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves is, well, first of all, the Christian Slater say, you know, something, F me, it works, when the catapult thing. And I think, I was going, I don't think they said that. But also that, the moment where the woman's telling the fortune by, like, spitting on a pancake griddle or something, and then rubbing her finger, that, and then the woman going, the painted man! At, like, Morgan Freeman, which is just awkward.
Here, I can sum up Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves in the moment when Robin Hood and his buddy first arrive back on the shores of his homeland, and he's standing at the water's edge, and he says in his American accent, "My home, my England, woo!"
Oh, I don't even remember that.
He goes, "Woo." Oh, it's awful. But Alan Rickman is delightful.
You know,
and he looks very, very sexy, all dressed in black with a beard.
Because
because
that was, you know, those sort of variations. That's all the best parts of his, you know, of his persona and his acting ability, not unlike Snape to some degree.
Also, there's a film, I don't know if you saw it, called Closetland.
No.
That he did with Sigourney Weaver, I believe it is. And it's really just almost like, it's like a two-person thing where she's a woman who is being interrogated by this horrible evil interrogator guy, and that is Alan Rickman, and it's just this amazing tour de force kind of performance.
When did that come out?
Late,
I don't even remember that.
Early to mid 90s, maybe.
Is it like a single room sort of a drama? I mean,
yeah.
It's like a
yeah.
See, that's enough to get me there. I mean, just the cast and that premise is enough to. My England, woo. Remember when we were giving Kevin Costner, like, film roles? And, I mean, we were letting him do stuff? What were we thinking with that?
So, listener Tom writes, the Dogfert Company specializes in interracial porn. I wonder if that's significant.
But that's, okay. Is that the same? Are they associated with the Twitter? Because Keelan actually asked a question. He says, I can understand calling somebody else that, but why would you name yourself that? That's a fair question.
Apparently, they have a website called blacksonblondes.com.
Oh, I don't know anything about that.
Okay.
There's also that line of the black and white in color. also black and gray. That's just black guys humping like 70-year-olds. Let's see. Oh, you know, speak real quickly on the Kevin Costner thing, because I was thinking about him the other night because I told you I was watching The Big Chill, and that's that, you know, everybody knows that whole thing about how he, you know, he plays the corpse in The Big Chill, and so you only ever get to see like, and what's weird is you can actually, if you know it's him, you can totally recognize him by the hair, because in the opening sequence of The Big Chill, there's just the shots of them preparing the corpse. And you can actually spot, you can go, that's totally Kevin Costner's hair, as they're, like, brushing the hair of the corpse. Are you going to show me some horrific interracial porn?
No, I'm going to actually show you. This has nothing to do with that. My friend Bobby.
Hey, prostitutes.
He photoshopped that up for you.
That's wonderful.
It says Emerson Farms.
We should put it on the net and try to convince people it's a real product and see people ask where they can buy it. And then we'll know if we can actually sell it.
At the bottom it says, get yourself a prostitute.
I bet if we put that out there, people will start saying, like, is that sold? Can I get that at New Seasons? Does Whole Foods have this? Wonderful.
A full-service selection for those looking for a genuine pasta experience.
Wow. Prostitutes.
Prostitutes.
Ask for them by name.
I will send this over to the Dropbox as well.
Before we do the house thing, my final Kevin Costner note is I was watching The Big Chill and I was noting that you can recognize his hair and what's his name? Lawrence Kasdan, who did The Big Chill, like cut him out at the last moment and made it up to him by putting him in Silverado and whatever later on.
You see his feet in the opening credits.
His feet, his wrist, and his hair. But I remember just sort of thinking about Kevin Costner for a while and thinking, like, what a weird mistake that was we all made. But then thinking about the number of movies that I might otherwise enjoy that are ruined by his presence, one of them being 13 Days, by the way, starring Bruce Greenwood as JFK in what is a really, really good performance. And also, I believe... Is it like Ivan Zelico or whatever, that guy from Homicide? I think he plays Bobby Kennedy. But 13 Days is a really, really great drama about the Cuban Missile Crisis, except it was produced by the real life... Someone's computer's making noise.
Music just started coming out of my computer.
Your computer hates you.
Why.
I have no point here, except to say that it was produced by this guy whose real-life father was part of the Cuban Missile Crisis. And so, anyway, so that guy, of course, his character has a huge role in the movie because his son produced it. And so his son wrote in a huge part for his dad in this film. And that role goes to Kevin Costner, who does the entire movie in the worst Boston accent I have ever heard in my entire life. I mean, I've heard some bad Boston accents, Ben Affleck. But Kevin Costner's Boston accent is so terrible. It's like I almost want that Salt Lake City company to give me like a cleaned up version of it where they just snip him out of all the sequences like they did with Jar Jar.
By the way, how is it possible that Ben Affleck's Boston accent is so awful when he comes from Boston?
I don't know. It's like do you ever do this? Do you ever listen to Pink Floyd sometimes? Like you listen to Another Brick in the Wall Part 2 and you go, that's not a real British accent. It sounds totally fake. It sounds completely fake. I always thought so when I was a kid. I had to be convinced that they were from Britain.
I made some comment once about Keira Knightley because she was in some costume drama. I can't remember what it was at the moment. It was about people having sex and intrigue and stuff. And I made some comment about her doing the worst British accent ever. And somebody said, but she actually is British.
Yeah.
I was like, yes, she is. But apparently she's not the kind of British that was the accent she was doing. And it was terrible.
No. She doesn't. Not unlike Kevin Costner, who is from America, but not from that part of America and can't really make it work. Yeah, the whole movie. And it's got Bruce Greenwood, who I really quite like. But the whole movie is just, it's just Kevin Costner talking like this about, well, you know, Castro, he'll respond. And it's like, and he speaks and it's like your soul dies a little bit.
Well, I always feel that way about Bull Durham, because Bull Durham is a really terrific movie. And it's almost impossible to see what Susan Sarandon's character sees in Costner's character, because he is such a plank of wood. And so it's one of those movies that would be perfect if you had actually had someone who could act in that role.
There ought to be some service where you can pay to have them just CGI in your favorite actor. You know, like Bull Durham with Alan Rickman.
Yeah.
Or, you know, whatever. Yeah.
Give it to me with Clooney.
Just stick him in. Well, you know, because Lucas is doing that thing of buying up the rights to dead actors, you know, so it could be, you know, you could have a Bull Durham with Jimmy Stewart. You could have Bull Durham with
Robert Mitchum.
Oh, get out of my head. See, I was just... I was just talking to Laura about, like, and then Don and I do this weird thing where the brains are finishing each other's sentences. It freaks me out a little bit. Like, there. Speaking of being a plank of wood, I should say, by the way, before we do this, we'll talk about last week's episode of House. Squires Electric brings you this House update, as well as the rest of today's fine program. Find out more about them at squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609 or facebook.com/squiresElectric. They are, one hesitates to say, one-stop shopping, but for your electrical needs, certainly. In terms of the wires or wiring in your home or business, they can take care of you and make sure that everything runs and works properly. And if it's installation that is your boggle, your boondoggle, they can make sure that it's done right, and it's done right the first time, so you're not going to end up having to have, you know, people come back, you know, 2, 3, 4 times, because then it just becomes a huge pain in the ass and you're spending more money and nothing's work right. Let me read this to you. This actually comes from it's an actual customer, not a paid endorsement or testimonial. It says, Squires did 3 quality jobs for me when I opened. This is somebody who was a business owner. Squires did 3 quality jobs for me when I opened. All work was done quickly and affordably. They got to my last job on very short notice, says this unsolicited testimonial as well, which was awesome. Speaking of the last job, I almost attempted it myself, says this man who then knew better. What could have possibly gone wrong with attempting to scale a 30-foot ladder and change out ceiling fan support rods myself? Oh, pretty much everything. Glad I called the experts and lived to tell about it. So that is an actual customer of Squires Electric. Work was done quickly and affordably. And says, glad I called the experts. I lived to tell. It is a customer of Squires Electric. So you can find them at squireselectric.com or facebook.com/squiresElectric or 503-252-1609. They bring you a Legion of News, also the Rick Emerson radio program. Also this, a recap of last night's episode of House. Don Taylor.
Well, here's what I remember from it, because, again, my mind tends to wander anymore when I'm watching House, and I'm thinking about, like, grocery lists and such. He was shooting up a bunch of stuff, and we were like, ooh, it's heroin, except he didn't look stoned, and I thought, well, of course it's not going to be heroin. It'll turn out to be something else, maybe some experimental drug that he's doing to try and make his leg better. And guess what it turned out to be? Some experimental drug that he's using to try and make his leg better that apparently has been being used on rats. And he, being the brilliant, genius medical professional that he is, said, well, if it's working kind of on rats, why would I not inject this directly into my own veins?
I mean, imagine if a patient was behaving that way. I mean, imagine the old House, the House that we knew and loved for the first few seasons, what he would have said to a patient who had just, you know, some little bit of medical knowledge and about something and decided just to jam it into his body. Yeah. Also, he's apparently become like a jewel thief. Because he's doing the thing of, you know, like, sidling into the research facility and with the brilliant, like, can you get me a cup of coffee? And then just pocketing medicine from a lab where apparently only one guy works and there are no cameras of any kind. And they don't actually count anything.
Right. They don't actually label or count or keep track of the vials.
Because they never track drugs.
No.
Ever.
Particularly when they're doing some kind of trial study.
Yeah.
They don't actually keep strict track of that stuff. And then, let's see, the medical mystery of the week was an Asian woman that had something wrong with her.
And then she was being dosed with radiation,
yeah.
I guess. It turned out that the
guy was, like, doing it on purpose for some murky reason that I didn't understand at the end.
Here's the conclusions I came to last night. One is that unless something drastic changes my opinion on this, I'm done with House after this season. I mean, I think next week or whenever the next episode is, I think there's 22 episodes, the next one's the season finale. I may come back for the series finale whenever that actually happens, but I think I am actually done. Just because, you know, because in this season, you know, it's like I wasn't terribly wild about it, but it was like the completist in me just wanted to, you know, like, it was a force of habit. I don't even have that. Like, it's just not worth it. It's like, and like with you, it's like the thing of, like, I actually have to, I catch myself drifting away and, like, staring at my feet, and I have to, like, you know, snap out of it and watch the show. But, so I realized that, A, I'm kind of done with it after this season. B, I really have grown to like Foreman more and more and more, to the point that I just, you know, that Foreman is the guy I root for, just like I started rooting for What's-His-Name to catch Dexter. I started rooting for Quinn to catch Dexter last season, because it's like, because it starts to insult your intelligence that he continually gets away with it. I mean, either Dexter or House. The other thing I realized last night is that I know that House is like an anti-hero, and that he's, you know, he's brilliant but lovable but curmudgeonly, but he secretly just wants to find that special person, but he's, you know, he masks his pain with humor and you know, scabrous sort of, you know, sarcasm, but he really is just a wounded little boy. But you know what I realized last night is I no longer really believe any of that, or the character is no longer that. What I realized about House is House is just a bully, and a junkie bully at that. He is just, he is a drug-using bully.
Well, he's no longer a believable character.
Right.
At some point, they've succumbed to that problem that TV shows often do, where the writers boil all the characters down to specific types.
Right.
And they know exactly in advance what those characters are going to say and do in any given situation because they are one-dimensional and there's no nuance to them whatsoever. And they've done that with House. He has just become nothing but a collection of his quirks.
Yeah, he's a bundle of ticks. You're totally right about that.
And it's tiresome. And the same thing with Cuddy. They have Cuddy say and do things that don't actually even make any sense because she is supposed to fill this particular role in the stories. But honestly, if I was on the board of directors of this hospital, I would fire her so fast.
Seriously, I was thinking this last night. Well, this is exactly what I was going to say, is that there's that sequence where Wilson goes to Cuddy and he says, Foreman goes to Cuddy and says, you know, like, basically, you guys have got to work this out because you're both neglecting the patient who's going to die. And clearly that is what's happening, and Cuddy's reaction is one of, like, denial, in its obvious denial, where she says, well, you know, if you're the doctor, you know, you take care of the patient. And it's obviously written in such a way that you can tell that, you know, she's in denial about the fact that what Foreman is saying is true. And at that moment I thought, well, that she is supposedly the authority figure and the one who tries to keep things running and tolerates House because he's brilliant. And so now you actually have her acting just like House, but not even in an interesting, believable way, just because they needed it that way to underline some story point, and because I guess they thought it was interesting. And that is when I think that was the moment when I actually started rooting for, like, Foreman or, you know, the medical board or someone to just come in and go, like, and we're closing the whole hospital. Everyone, well, get out. You're going to jail.
And last week she was screwing around and lying and messing around because she's trying to cover up this thing
with
her mom.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, I'm sorry, she shouldn't have that job anymore. You know, and she was sleeping with House, and they broke up, and it is affecting, you know, her professional, you know.
It's like, even within the confines of that world, it's not believable.
No.
I mean, I know there's a lot of things. It's like, the show sort of makes an agreement with you when you first start watching, where they say, like, there really are no vampires, we understand that, but in the world of, like, True Blood or whatever, these are the rules, you know, by which we obey. And House doesn't even follow its own rules at this point. And that is the moment when I think the show became irretrievable for me, is that I just so badly, like, root now for him just to get his comeuppance. And I think and I don't think that's intentional. I mean, I think, like, with the spoilers, I think, like, with The Shield, that was intentional on Sean Ryan's part, where you start out rooting for Mackey, and at the end, even if you sort of like Vic Mackey, by the end, you have come around and you realize, like, wow, I've been rooting for a horrible person, and everything needs to come home to roost. Or at the end of the third Californication season, where, you know, like, everything, Hank Moody kind of just, you know, it all kind of goes belly up because that's the way that it has to, because he has reaped what he has sown. And that was intentional. I think with House, they still think they're making him the charming bad little boy, and I think they've miscalculated badly because he's just no longer likable. And, like, the whole fake out of the, like, is he doing heroin, is he not? The other moment when I realized he'd just become a bully and someone that I just am no longer interested in watching, and again the worst kind of bully is you take bully and then you mix that with substance abuse. It was that, I mean, I know it's just a goddamn television show, but that moment where I became angry at him for someone else, which is not a mark of being involved with the show, just a mark of how willy-nilly they are with their own rules, when he was just walking around the office, like, breaking Wilson's pictures with his cane. And I was just thinking, like, you know, why doesn't somebody just belt this guy in the chops?
Well, and it's also reached a point where the whole premise early on in the first few seasons was that people wanted to work with him and put up with his ill behavior and his quirks because he is such a brilliant diagnostician. He doesn't even do the work on the patients anymore.
Right.
He isn't even there most of the time. He's like calling them on the phone or just, like, sitting in his office when they come in to tell him that they're doing something because he's off.
Because he's trying to win a bet.
Trying to win a bet or pick up a hooker or buy a Segway or drive a monster truck. He's not even there doing the thing that is the reason why people ostensibly put up with him in the first place.
I do really wish that they had. I do really wish that they had kept the device of Amber, of Wilson's dead girlfriend in House's head. I thought that was actually really interesting, and I think that would have kept the show on some sort of a, because he just has no. There is no moral regulator on him, not even externally at this point. So,
Wilson, they don't even know what they're doing with that character anymore. He shows up at the beginning, and he's dancing.
Yeah.
And, somebody's like, oh, that'll be cute if you're watching him dance. And I'm just thinking, he wouldn't do that.
No.
Why is he doing that? There's no reason he would do that.
They must just be thinking, like with every season, they get more and more money, and so they're just going to play that thread out as long as they possibly can. I mean, the actors, too. I mean, Hugh Laurie, I mean, as a talented actor as he is, he must be thinking, like, I can do these fools. I can do this in my sleep. I don't even have to really act. I can just use, like, half my brain, and they'll pay me the entire, more every single year. So, and plus, Hugh Laurie is a guy that he knows. Maybe he doesn't know this, but I mean, that he's a guy that we will continue to love anyway. I mean, I'll love Hugh Laurie forever. He's a great actor. And so he must just figure, what's the harm?
But that American TV money, I mean, he's going to ride this as long as he possibly can.
Just to bring this full circle, final question before we end this. This is back on the Costner thing, speaking of that plank of wood. Jenny wants to know, do you also hate Dances with Wolves?
Oh, I do. I do.
Okay.
I loathe Dances with Wolves.
I have to confess, I have never seen Dances with Wolves.
I had that painful experience, if you've ever had the thing where you really, really hate a movie and all of your friends love it.
Yes, yes.
And you're the one who's just going, Yeah, that's my whole thing with Dances with Wolves.
I have never, I kind of just know it. It's one of those movies I feel like I've seen because I've seen it parodied and I've seen so many bits of it. I've actually never watched Dances with Wolves. All I know is that it gave him the idea of making one epic after another. So it seems like it wrought a lot of bad things.
It did. It did indeed.
So there you go. Is it just Kevin Costner teaching things to brown people?
Yeah.
Or learning, reaching. Is it like
down on his hands and knees and
eat,
and
pray, dance with wolves,
pretending to be a buffalo and going katanka, katanka, and lots of shots of things on the horizon going across the sunset in silhouette because that looks all epic and it's grandeur and blah,
epic
blah,
is
blah.
Usually, in my experience, you know what epic is? Epic is code for a big wide shot of nothing. And then one thing in it somewhere to give everything else some scale. That's it. Look, it's a canyon. And then, at the bottom of a canyon, is like a guy picking some juniper berries.
I've only liked Kevin Costner really in two movies. I liked him in, the Kasdan Western.
Silverado.
Silverado. I liked him in Silverado. And I liked him in A Perfect World with Clint Eastwood.
Yeah.
And those are it. Really. Even something like Bull Durham, which I really, really like, and Tin Cup is also a good movie, but he's just awful.
Yeah,
he's an awful, awful actor.
And he is just such a clanker in movies that could be great. I'm a big fan of, and actually, which I've watched many, many more times because you gifted me with this, I'm a huge fan of JFK, the movie JFK, and it's like, and he's not flat out dreadful in that, but boy, there's 9 million other choices that would have been better.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a movie where it's there's so much going on and there's so many great actors that you can kind of, he gets lost in the wash a little bit, but the presence of so many great actors just underscores the fact that you're watching a glass of water try to deliver lines, and it just doesn't work. So there you go. There's your answer, Jenny. So I won't be seeing that.
My first husband actually made a remark about his Wyatt Earp.
Yeah.
Where he said that every time he comes on screen and open his mouth, it's just like these giant turds just fall from his lips and fall on the ground at his feet.
Awesome. And then Scott Daly is there to pick them up and proclaim them better than Tombstone. with that, we bring to a conclusion another episode of the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Join us tomorrow when our guests will include Ms. Anna Griffin, thrice weekly columnist from The Oregonian. Don't forget this Thursday at 7 p.m., the book signing for Zombie Economics. That's going to be happening at Barnes & Noble Lloyd Center. And please, I swear to God, it took me 9 hours to make an event thing on Facebook. So if you just, get a chance to click over there.
Even if it's just say no.
Even if it's just to go maybe, because you feel sorry for me. For the love of God. I mean, Let's see, what else? So forth. And then Friday, Big Jim Willig will be in the studio. And then this weekend, Wonder Northwest. So all of that coming up. After a brief musical interlude, we'll have an encore of today's Legion of News, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon, at the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill. Oh, the sun is so hideously hot. Executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa, as always made possible by a generous grant from you. This program is, it is Tuesday, May 10th, 2011, and that is the frequency, Kenneth. Thank you for listening. Be safe. See you tomorrow. Bye now.